The Agustin Hosinga Show with your host Agustin Hosinga.
Smack the shit out your bitch ass midget girlfriend, nigga.
Hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Agustin Hosinga Show with I, your host, Agustin Hosinga. And this is episode number 760. That is 760760 of the Agustin Hosinga Show with I, your host, Agustin Hosinga. And I hope you're doing well wherever this podcast may find you. I hope you are doing swimmingly. I think I just blew out some of your flipping eardrums right now because I'm looking at my meter and it's hitting on the red bit. So I think I might have blew out some of your guys' eardrums. So I apologize for that. That sounds kind of aff. I apologize for that profusely. And I hope your ears are not bleeding. I really do hope your ears are not bleeding. How am I? All good, all things considered, I cannot complain, I cannot cry, I cannot be sad, I'm all flipping good in the hood. Nice bit of training, I've been running a bit more than usual because I still need to fit back into my flipping Rick Owen shorts, which are just crying to me on my shelf right now. I got these lovely Rick Owen shorts, I have like a skirt connected to it that I wear all the time, I got these other shorts that I wear all the time, I got these really nice pants that I wear all the time, I got these JW Anderson designed Luebe trousers, high-waisted Luebe trousers, massive cuffs, haven't worn them yet. The Balenciaga flats are still there. Haven't got them in the outfit just yet because I just need to get that little bit of LBs dropped. And I'll be back wearing that fucking slivet stuff, okay? That's all I'll be bloody doing. So I'm feeling good, feeling fine. Everything is going flipping well. What else is on the list for me today? What else has happened? Oh, United are playing tonight, later on today, this evening. United v Chelsea. Looking forward to that. That should be a flipping good one. Obviously, it's not going to be a good one. I'm telling that sarcastically. It's not going to be a good one. It's not going to be a good one. But apart from that, you know what I've been doing? I've been listening to the Beyonce album. I've been listening to it, right? And I don't know what my feelings are about it, but I'm siding towards the side of like... So, Beyonce, Cowboy Carter. My initial feelings behind it were, sounds very expensive. Sounds very well produced. Obviously, it's telling a story. And the story that I'm kind of getting from it is essentially Beyonce returning back to her roots. Beyonce uplifting and telling the story of her family while also telling her version of the American story. And kind of using the vessel of country music to display how similar we all are despite our differences. Race, whatever, you know, not our, but, you know, American people's differences. So I've been trying to say, hey, even though country music is traditionally seen as like a white person's genre, it has roots in black music, but it doesn't mean it's a black person's thing. It just means that we've all been doing it since the beginning of time. We've all been telling stories through songs, through hymns, through prayers, through affirmations. That's how we're doing it. So she's basically trying to tell her story, her family story, the history of black people in America, while also trying to like rewrite the narrative around country music and also around genres. Because there's a little skit in the album where it's like, music should be genreless. There should be no genres in music, which I think is super dumb. Genres exist for a reason because certain people love... It's like genres in fucking movies. The idea that you should have genres in music is idiotic. For me personally, I think like, for some reason, even though I could count myself as a musician... I wouldn't really count myself as a musician, even though I'm a DJ. I don't really think that counts. I think to count yourself as a musician, you have to actually create music. And I haven't really created any music yet. So I think the moment you create music, you count yourself as a musician. But I play other people's music. But I listen to a lot of music anyway. And I've listened to a lot of musicians speak. And they have this thing where they really don't like when people try to pigeonhole them or try to tell them what their sound is. Every musician thinks that they're really unique and they're creating their own sound. But really and truly, they usually come in, you know, they're usually following the footsteps of giants. They're usually trying to emulate one of their heroes. So their heroes set like a template, set a tone, set like a theme, sonically, whatever it may be, stylistically, and they're trying to follow in that kind of footstep. So there is a genre that you're kind of following. Maybe you're kind of skewing and you're kind of twisting it and warping it to fit your, you know, your vision. But there is a genre there that you're kind of following. So the idea that genres don't exist, I think, is a little bit insulting to our intelligence, I think, as fans. And also does a disservice to the genre that you're obviously following the footsteps of, because it doesn't help to push your elevator, because you're like, oh no, I'm not there. I'm on my own. I'm not hip hop. I'm here. I'm not R&B. I'm over there. So no. Help to elevate them sound by bringing your own version of it. So people can be like, oh shit, look at all these different versions of hip hop. It's like, do you remember when Odd Future came around? What I loved about Odd Future when they came around wasn't that, you know, obviously supremely talented, but the thing I loved about Odd Future is that they brought a different type of sound to what we were listening. Like, at that time, it was all kind of, you know, I won't say formulaic, but it was pretty, you know, kind of easy to follow. But Odd Future came around, Tyler the Creator, L Sweatshirt, all these guys, and they were presenting hip-hop in like a different prism, a different sort of lens. You're looking at, oh shit, hip-hop could also be this. Hip-hop could also have these influences, this stylistically. Videos could look like this. Cadences could be like this. Rhyming patterns could be like this. All those things are super, 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 super important. And I just wish more of these artists would kind of like embrace that, but they don't want to. And I don't really know why. Regardless, going back to Beyonce, Cowboy Carter, the reason why I really enjoyed it for me personally was that I felt as if like it was almost, I won't say an awakening. Was it an awakening? Would you call it an awakening? Kind of an awakening. It almost kind of felt like a reminder of like that country, that soul in country music, because obviously you don't get it a lot with the white version of country is a little bit different to what you would, you know, whatever, right? But that soul, it kind of felt vintage, it kind of felt old school, and that was what I really loved about it. And to be fair to the album, it's very broad. It covers a huge spectrum of different sounds, from I'd say like poppy, disco-y stuff, R&B. It's all over the place. Honestly, it's all over the place. It's really interesting, weird album, because it's like, what, 27 tracks long? And I honestly didn't get bored once. It's definitely like a musical journey. It tells a good story. So I was very, very much entertained by it. So as much as I was on the fence about it, I really like it. There's another part of me that's like, is Beyonce like the black Taylor Swift? That's the other thing that's nagging in the back of my head. Like, is Beyonce the black Taylor Swift? Is she just like at a level of like, I won't say perfection, but maybe simplicity, norminess. I don't know. There's something. Whenever I listen to Destiny's Child, I'm reminded of the like attitude, the edge, sophistication. Just there was some kind of oomph with Destiny's Child were around. Nowadays, with Beyonce, it kind of feels a bit, I won't say lackadaisical, but it just doesn't give you that oomph that Beyonce used to give you when she was in, you know what I mean? That's the only thing I don't really love about it. I'm still trying to figure out what's going on there. Whether it's my ears, I'm not getting attuned to what she's putting out now. Whether or not it's the sound, it's not really, you know, what I want. I don't know. There's something there. I don't know how to describe it, but there's something missing. But apart from that, I loved it. My favorite song on the album is definitely Riverdance, right? Bounce on the Dun, 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 dun. Like, that song is absolutely banging. It's like, what, track 23 on the whole album. Riverdance might be my favorite song. It's absolutely, what a slapper. Dance, 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 dance. Bounce on the shit, dance. Bounce on the shit, dance. Like, that is running through the river with you. That song is absolutely banging. But, yeah, big up Beyonce, I guess. Check it out if you want to, I guess. You're not really missing out on anything if you don't. That's the thing with this. That's the thing I feel like with music nowadays. Apart from certain artists, you're not really missing out on anything. Like, you could take my review, listen to it if you want to or not, but you're not really missing out on listening to it anymore. There's not really like, oh, you have to stop everything to listen to this album type of thing. It doesn't really exist too much. Maybe we'll get that with Playboi Carti when he eventually drops. I don't really know, but music doesn't really have that kind of like, anymore. You know, it's a little bit like, you could want it. If you want it, you could have it. If you don't want it, don't have it. It's kind of a bit wishy-washy. So that's a little bit disappointing. That is a little bit disappointing. But hey, what can you do? What can one do. Okay, moving on from that, we have some good news for myself anyway, because I still haven't been. Imagine all of these fucking days, all of these Sundays, and I still haven't been. So Fold have announced that they're going to put on another Unfold party happening on the 14th of April. Unfold is the party that Fold does on a Sunday. It's become like the place to be if you're like in the London techno nightlife scene, is to go Fold on a Sunday. And they do a good little rave because essentially they get to pack in more hours, because essentially it runs from 12 to 12. So it literally 12 hours of raving, which is quite sick. And obviously, you know, it's a Sunday and shit, take the Monday off. Or sometimes if it's a bank holiday, you can have a really late one. But regardless, it's like a new way of raving in London, because for the most part, our clubs in London close really early. Even Fold, it was kind of billed as like a 24-hour club, but I'm assuming because of licensing laws and local councils and shit, even that got like knocked on the head. And it seems like they just have like a you know, they have a 24-hour license maybe four times a year that they kind of, you know, divvy out to probably some promoters, or maybe keep for themselves through their own in-house parties. Regardless, they don't really much wiggle room in that regard. They do a good job already to open at six, because I think Fold might be one of like five clubs in London, maybe five nightclubs that you'd want to go to anyway. Not the other ones. The other ones you probably wouldn't want to go to. Like, I don't know, there's like an O'Neill's or something, and you probably open until five. But this club is only one of the only clubs in London open till six. Opens at 11, closes at six on like, you know, weekdays and shit. I mean, Thursday to Saturday, and on the Sunday, it's got Unfold happening on 12 to 12. The great thing about Unfold is that there's no lineups announced. So it's all kind of hush-hush. If you go, you'll find out who's playing. And I think part of the reason was to do it was so they could get like good guests to play. Because if you know anything about booking and promoting and whatnot, right? Essentially, I think it works in any kind of field. Some artists get kind of locked. So if you're playing a certain venue, you're not allowed to play other venues within the same city within a certain time frame. So they kind of lock you in for that one. So a good way to get around it is just to book somebody, but not put them on a lineup and kind of do like cash in hand, under the table type of thing. So I think that's what Unfold will have done. Unfold have basically done that attitude. It's like, hey, we're not going to put your name on there. We're not going to blast it out. We're just going to say it's Unfold. Come and play for us. So that means that they have some sick guests. So I think the last one, actually, there's one that happened last weekend that I actually missed out on. There's a picture here. You can see some of the guests that played. This is, I guess it's some of the people that played, or maybe the guests there. And on the next page, you'll see some of the guests that played. Look at that. You got Philippa Pasho. You got Imogen playing, big DJs. You got Sarah Wild, Wes Bagley's pretty, I say it's pretty big DJ. And a few other there. So like they kind of get some big names that play on the Sunday. So it's a quite decent affair. So I still haven't been. I don't know why. Maybe because I just don't, you know, it's a Sunday in London, going at 12 to 12 feels a little bit mad. And I don't know, I have a feeling that it's going to be full of like ket heads and shit. Even though I can be a ket head when I want to, I feel like it's going to be full of like sweaty people, sweaty ket heads who had not been home since Saturday, staying out until Sunday. It's not the kind of vibe I want. I mean, it's not probably as sophisticated and sexy as I'd want it to be, but I probably still need to go just to kind of see what the vibe is like, because that's also a place that I'd like to play at. Do you know what I mean? That kind of venue, the kind of Unfold type of vibe, is probably a great way to kind of get in there and kind of play on that sound system, see how it feels. That'd be pretty sick. But it should be flipping amazing. I'm assuming because of the people already commenting, most likely they're going to be playing. And most likely I, Jordan, and fucking Tekra are going to be playing there. Or Tekra, however you pronounce the name. I think I've mentioned it's Tekra. I'm probably going to be playing, so that probably makes more sense. But I'll check it out and see what happens. But yeah, Unfold is happening, what you call it, April 14th at Fold. Check it out if you're in London. Check out if you're in London. Talking about DJ gigs, I've been emailing some places, and I've realized, you know what, yeah? I don't think it makes any sense to send anybody a mix. I think I'd be better off focusing on what I'm doing on the stream, uploading my SoundClouds, doing my live stream DJ mixes, and kind of leaving that there and hoping that those videos kind of spread organically and people see me through that and want to book me. Because sending people emails or DMs to play at places, I'm not going to lie, it does do a little bit of a number on your ego. It does do a bit of a number on your confidence. And I'm somebody, I pride myself on being supremely confident, supremely self-assured, supremely just like, you know, there. And even I can get knocked down when I see like read or seen and like, oh. Or you send an email and it's like, It's been 4 weeks and no one's even opened it. You're like, Jesus Christ. Or, you know, no, DM is obviously what it is. But I think emails are even worse because emails, you don't even get a notification they read it. Right? Unless you're a freak that has like red receipts on your email, like a fucking tracker. But most people, when you send an email out, there's nothing. There's no reply. So I'm out here sending emails about gigs and shit. And it's like, no reply. I'm sending DMs about fucking playing at certain places. You're getting left on fucking scene. And it's like, God damn, man. The scene is fucking cutthroat. But again, I don't take it personally because at the end of the day, it's mostly about what you can do for them. And if they're seeing me, small time guy, don't get many plays, the views aren't what they should be, not as high as it could be, I understand. So it's basically a matter of like, get your clout up, get your fucking visibility up, get your fame up, become more. At the end of the day, the lesson to be learned from all types of content, just be more famous. That's it. Become more popular. It doesn't really matter how good you are or anything. Just become more, which is weird because I think it's actually harder to become more popular than it is to be good at what you do. To actually get people to give a fuck about you and not the hundreds and thousands and millions of people out there doing the same thing you're doing is actually way harder than just becoming good at what you do, personally. Because just becoming good at what you do doesn't require anybody else's input. It just requires you to be at home practicing on your craft, whatever that craft is, right? Just you sitting at home, just practicing. But to be good, to be like popular, you need to engage. You need to like do stuff, you know? You need to like engage with the, like there's like a to and fro. It's all over the place. So I'm kind of realizing in real time, like, rah, boy. Like, okay, I'm a real small fry out here. I'm a real insignificant minor character in this game. Even though I think I'm the main character, obviously. That's why I'll be fucking doing this podcast and shit and talking into a microphone, sitting into an empty room and shit, right? But I'm not the main character. What a surprise. I am not that important. What a surprise. What a shock. What a fucking kick to the nuts of the fucking ego. I sat there thinking, wow, I just sent you a DM, you know, not a long one. I'm not writing 500 words, but I put together a decent DM, right? I kind of tried to chill out with the emojis. I sent a little link, little clips and shit, and no reply, nothing. God damn. Okay, cool. Even though, you know, I rate my skills as best as anybody out there, I got to get my clout up, I got to get my fame up, and that's kind of the way to go. But damn, bro, I'd realized, because again, I haven't done it in a while. I was kind of off that, and I thought, let me just do my own thing. But then, you know, you kind of get tempted to be like, yo, no, let me hustle, let me ask. But to be honest anyway, if I'm thinking about it, and this is a weird thing to say out loud, but I honestly think I haven't received, I don't know about you guys, but I don't think I've received anything in my life from asking. I really don't think so. Even jobs and shit. You just get them through your own hard work and just circumstances, momentum, luck. But you don't really get anything from saying, hey, can you give me, can I have, you don't really get anything from that. You get more from like you doing something, somebody being, oh, all right, sick. I like that. I could use that. You know what I mean? Like even when you apply for jobs, you have to apply for like, you know, like you don't really like, oh, give, you don't really get, it's like the job has to be open. There has to be a vacancy. You have to apply at a certain time. You have to meet the criteria, blah, 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 blah. But I can't really think of anything I've gotten in my life where I've kind of asked. And again, I'm not an asker anyway. So I don't really have my hands out. So it's always a bit difficult and weird for me to even type up those emails. I always feel really awkward. You know what I mean? But damn, man, damn. Damn, damn, damn. It's honestly, it's bruising. I'm not going to lie. It's fucking bruising. It's actually bruising. It left us seem like, okay, cool, man. I can't unsend that. You already seen it. Fuck. Fuck. You know, that's what happens. You're like, fuck. Anyway, what can you do? What can you do? What can you do? You keep on going, you keep on striving, you move forward, you don't pay attention to those things, and you just keep on going. Okay? Anyways, big up Caseload Moses. Chill out, Z. You do the exact same thing when your fans message you. It's quite normal. Nah. That's not the same, bro. That's not the same. And you have to be real. That's not the same. I understand. I'm not the best at replying to DMs and stuff because I'm not really, you know, The Instagram thing is a bit annoying. And I want to be, like, doing things. You know what I mean? But nah, man. Come on. That's not the same. Not the same at all. Not the same at all. I would imagine if you're asking me for something, I'm going to be on it and reply to you for something. But if it's just like chatty, you know, it doesn't really matter when I reply, to be honest. That's the whole beauty of sending a message. You can reply anytime. But if I'm asking for, you know, a bringing, hey, I'd like to play at this, you know, that's a different sort of like dynamic when it comes to those type of info, you know, emails and DMs. It could be a stern like, hey, we're good for now, we're gonna pass on that, you don't really fit our vibe, no problem. But at least you got an acknowledgement, at least you know where you stand. Not seeing like, I'd much rather you not open my message than just leave me unseen. That means you read it and you thought no point in replying. You just backed out. It's like, god damn. But I also think it's also wasted energy. You know, I definitely think it's wasted energy. Wasting your time trying to figure out what the right message, all that stuff is wasted, because at the end of the day, if you've got enough clout, all that message don't going to matter. They're going to just send you one line. Hey, do you want to play? Hey, we've seen your stuff. Do you want to come down? Like, you know, it's not really worth it, like, trying to send emails and being like, nah. So, yeah, I'm off it. But I had to do it to kind of, you know, prove that I could, and to not be a fanny and shit, and to kind of, you know, embrace all the stuff going on. But yeah, I'm not on it anymore. I'm not on it. Continuing on and talking about messages and all this malarkey. This is a small minor issue here that I need to kind of pinpoint here. I need to kind of highlight, because this is something that's really fucking annoyed me. And talking about, actually, on the subject of not answering messages, on the subject of what Kesa Moses was talking about not answering messages and not getting back to people, this is something that I detest. This is something that I detest with my whole entire heart. And I just want to say this in the open, in the hope that maybe something will change off the back of the minor things that I say. Unlikely, because I'm a small fry, I'm insignificant, nobody gives a fuck, it is what it is, blah 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 blah. But there is some hope in me that maybe me highlighting what I'm going to highlight, that maybe something will change. And you're wondering, Agostino, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm talking about Ambush. So Ambush is a brand created by Yoon. Yoon from Ambush made these boots for the autumn 2023 collection. It's now April 2024. And there's been no inclination of when these fucking boots are going to arrive. I sent an email. I DM'd the fucking brand. There's people in the comments. There's people in the comment section of this post asking, the shoes are crazy, the boots. No replies. Another person saying, are the boots currently available? I don't see them listed on the website. No reply. 10 weeks ago. No like, no reply, no nothing. And I fucking hate this about this brand and about Yoon from Ambush. It's as if I don't even know where this brand even exists. Is this brand even available to buy except for the website? Like, what is this? Is she just getting sponsored to make this brand? Like, why is there no communication with the fucking buyers or with the customers or with the potential customers or with the fans? Why is there no communication? Why don't we know when these fucking boots are going to come out? Why? Why is there no indication of when they're coming out? Why is there no replies? Why is there no fucking, you know, likes on comments? Oh, they've been delayed. Manufacturing issues. Don't get me wrong. They're a bit gaudy. They're a bit crazy. Some of you guys won't like the boots. Essentially, they look like a reinterpretation of New Rock boots, which I have. I have a couple of New Rock boots. If you know what New Rock boots are about, you know Wagwan. New Rock's in. If you're not in it, I get it. You know, stand on that side. But these are quite a cool looking boot. I think they come in this high version. There's also like a quarter version that just comes just underneath your fucking calf. And there's absolutely no information on when these are going to drop. So most likely, I'm imagining that these have been scrapped. Which is annoying, because it's like one of those things that people do in fashion where they'll have a certain piece on the runway as like a little styling prop, but then it's never available to you to buy, which is fucking annoying. It's the ultimate honey dick, right? You got this amazing jacket, this amazing hoodie, this amazing bag, but it's just for the runway. Because the buyers didn't buy it, so you don't produce it, which is annoying, right? That's like they're fucking beholden by the fucking buyers. If the buyers don't fucking select stuff that they want to buy for next season, it doesn't get fucking produced or manufactured. Annoying. But communicate that with the fucking fans. Nothing. Zero. And I've gone through every single post that features these boots, and there's been no indication, no even insight, no fucking anything about when these boots are going to come out, if they're ever going to come out. It's so fucking frustrating. And I absolutely hate it, because I don't think Ambush is a big enough brand to just ignore people. Ambush isn't Saint Laurent. Ambush isn't Balenciaga. Ambush isn't, you know, Gucci. Ambush isn't fucking D Squared. Ambush isn't Diesel online even. You don't get that many messages anyway. Look how many comments they've got on this post. Two. You can't reply to two messages. You can't reply. You posted this 11 weeks ago. This person posted 10 weeks ago. So a week after, you can't fucking reply and say, hey, or just like it and acknowledge the fucking comment. You can't do that. Why can't you reply to the comments? Why are you too good to reply to the comments from the fans or for potential customers? It's an absolute liberty, absolute piss take. I fucking hate it. And it's so, I won't say disrespectful, but it's a bit insulting. You know, when you follow a brand and you want to support, you want to buy or whatever, or you just want to know when stuff are dropping, if it's not dropping, just say, hey, it's not coming out. It's been cancelled. It's been scrapped. We couldn't find the materials for the toe cap or whatever. Because I'm assuming that's what probably happened. Cool. But tell us. They haven't told us anything. Zero. And I saw these boots when they first were, you know, in the collection. I was like, oh shit, I got my eyes on them. I'm going to keep an eye out on them and see when they're going to drop. See if they come in my size and maybe I'll cop. And now I'm just like, whatever, man. Whatever. You know what I mean? It's fucking April. The fucking season of these boots is already gone. Wagwan now. Nothing's happening. Zero. And I fucking detest it. I wish that there would be more on it. And, you know, you see Ambush flying around everywhere, taking pictures with fucking Jay-Z, doing all this good stuff, going to a studio and designing. But I don't see anybody wearing this stuff in real life. Maybe because no one sells it or no one buys it. I don't know. And the stuff that is good, they don't even reply and let you know when it's going to come out anytime soon. Look, it's even listed here. Knee-high rave boot. But it's not available anywhere. What the fuck? Knee-high rave boot. When are we going to get this knee-high rave boot, Ambush? Please let the fans know, if you don't mind. If it's not too much hassle, could you let the fans know when the fucking knee-high rave boot is going to come out? Is that possible? Cool. Thank you so much. God damn, man. I fucking detest it, honestly. There's nothing I hate more than going on like a brand site, a brand Instagram, and see people ask questions. Oh, what's the size? Oh, does it come in this color? Oh, when are you going to get a restock? And no reply, no acknowledgement. Right? Reply to the question, man. If anything, reply to social media questions actually limits the amount of questions you get in your inbox, customer service wise. If you actually reply, like I've done customer service and social media management and all that shit. If you actually reply to like social media messages and sometimes you pin stuff or whatever, or usually most social media accounts, if you're like the account, you know, whatever, you posted the thing and you reply, your reply usually would get bumped up so someone could see, okay, cool, you replied to this comment and they could just, it basically turns your Instagram page into an FAQ. But you don't reply to fucking Instagram messages. Most likely don't reply to DMs. Most likely don't reply to fucking emails. Absolute piss take. I fucking hate it. Again, small inconvenience. I get it. But I fucking detest it. So why not absolute moan about it? Hopefully, Ambush gets their shit together. Hopefully, Ambush get their shit together. Hopefully, Ambush get their fucking shit together. Talking about getting their shit together. And talking about an ambush. Big up my guy, Ye. Big up my guy, Ye. Formerly known as Kanye West. Big up my goat. Big up my guy. Big up him. Because look at this fucking headline. Look at this headline. Look at this headline. Ye praised Hitler and spoke of going for the gays. Lawsuit claims. He's a fucking psycho, man. He's a psycho. It's like, I love that he's getting madder as he gets older. I've said before, I think I've got an advantage because I listen to so much music, because I've, you know, bit of a music fan. I love all the genres, right? Because of all that shit, I've been exposed to a lot of like erratic, weirdo, freaky guys. Lead singers, guitar players, drummers, whatever, hangers-on, clouty people, industry people. In all genres, there's a version of them. But I think in hip-hop, there's not really space for like the oddities. It doesn't really exist, especially personality-wise, opinions on the world. People kind of freak out on it. But I've long said that I thought that Ye was the closest thing to like Morrissey that hip-hop has. In terms of somebody who people hold up in high esteem for like his old music catalogue, in terms of Morrissey with the Smiths and stuff, some of the early Morrissey solo albums. But as the years progress, his own views and personality started to like get on people's nerves to the point that it tainted the artwork, and people now can't look at it the same. And it's the same thing with Kanye or with Ye, in that he's created such an amazing body of work, like stage shows out of this world, fashion, you know, setting trends, footwear, it's done what it's done. But because of his personality, his opinions, he's become so hard to like get behind and rally behind, because he says so many, you know, detestable things. He comes across as such a cunt. All these type of things people don't like, but I'm so used to it that I can put up with it. Like, I can definitely separate the art from the artist, but I'm also a bit of a weirdo in that the more unpalatable you are, the more divisive, the more Marmite you are, the more I want to back you now, because it's now harder to be your fan. Because it's all well and good being Kanye's fan when he drops 808s and Heartbreak. You know, being a Kanye fan when Yeezus drops is even pretty easy. And remember, Yeezus was just a Confederate flag, right? It wasn't even that crazy. We thought that was crazy. Remember, we thought it was crazy when Ye was walking around with a bomber jacket with a Confederate flag. We thought, oh my God, he's lost it. Now look where we are. You know what I mean? So if it's for me personally, I feel like I resonate more with people who decide to go left, because I feel like there's way more risk involved. Like Ye essentially like eviscerated his friendship group. Eviscerated, like he took a flamethrower to his whole entire friendship group. For the moment, I feel like for the moment Virgil got the Louis Vuitton job, Ye suddenly like turned into like I don't give a fuck about anybody type of thing. He eviscerated his whole friendship group. He doesn't hang around with none of those guys anymore. Don C, Matthew Williams, Heron Preston, all these guys aren't around anymore. It's just him and his wife and like a whole other Yeezy team. But that whole team he was with before, that whole like old Donda team, doesn't even exist. So he clearly purposely like started saying all these things that weren't really what, you know, the right thing to say, political leans that people didn't agree with, and now he's kind of on his own island. But I enjoy that more because I like all the freaks, I like all the weirdos. So this thing is absolutely incredible. This kind of new chapter in the fucking Ye story is absolutely hilarious, right? So let's actually read this lawsuit details. Absolutely crazy. I love the picture as well. He just knows he's going to cause havoc. That's a picture of somebody that knows he's going to fucking cause havoc. Let's scroll down to this fucking text here. Ye, the rapper, formerly known as Kanye West, was sued on Tuesday by a former employee who accused him of discrimination and creating a hostile work environment by calling Adolf Hitler great, disparaging Jews, and saying that gay people are not true Christians. The funny thing is, he probably has at least one German person working for him. He probably has at least one Jewish person working for him. And he probably has at least one gay person working for him. And he still says those things. That's the thing that makes it hilarious about Ye. The lawsuit was filed in Los Angeles Superior Court by Trevor Phillips, who says that he was hired in November 2022 around the time a series of anti-Semitic remarks publicly made by Ye lost the artist his major record label deal and put his business in jeopardy. Phillips was initially hired to oversee projects related to the growing cotton. What? Related to growing cotton and other plants in an effort to make easy Ye's fashion brand self-sustainable. Growing cotton. So was Ye going to take over fucking denim tier shit? That's what, I'm surprised actually Tremaine hasn't done that. Like try and grow his own cotton fields or something, right? And produce like, and bring the whole thing full circle. Cotton Reef? Yeah. Full circle thing. Maybe. I don't know. Let's continue. Circular production. Circular manufacturing. Who knows? Continue. Phillips was initially hired to oversee the project related to growing cotton, Ye's fashion brand, to make it self-sustainable. The lawsuit said, and then went on to work at Donda Academy, Ye's private school in Southern California. Phillips' lawsuit claims that Ye made anti-Semitic comments in the front of staff members at Donda Academy, including the Jews are out to get me. And the Jews are stealing all my money. After Anus ended his decade-long partnership with Ye, his public remarks and lawsuit claim, the rapper told Phillips the Jews are working with Adidas to freeze up my God and to try and make me broke. That's the thing I love about Ye. The thing I love about Ye is that he's such a narcissist, he's such an egomaniac, that he has no concept of the stuff that he says to annoy people. All he sees is what you do to him. And again, I'm a fan of Ye. I love Ye. Everything about him. I stand with the guy. Full. But he is such an egomaniacal, narcissistic dude that he does not see the things that he does to people that provoke them to do that to him. Because he thinks He just thinks like, Adidas woke up one day and thought, we're going to end this partnership. Even though all the figures that came out of Adidas, right, that said Adidas basically, I think Yeezy accounted for like, again, I don't know the exact figure, but I remember hearing a figure around like 30%. Yeezy basically accounted for 30% of Adidas sales. Now think about that, because that's crazy, because Yeezy's only like, it's not even a 10-year brand. So for a brand that's like a sub-label, you know, subsidiary of like Adidas to be accounting for 30% of the sales, that means he was selling fucking SKUs in the millions, right? And most likely people say the Adidas partnership is what actually made him a billionaire. That's actually what got him there, because obviously Adidas manufacturing, production, they can really ramp up so they can produce like, you know, a million 350s if they want to, right? In all black. Whereas maybe Ye on his own might not be able to do those kind of numbers. And obviously, you know, the margins are quite way lower for them, blah, 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 blah. So he thinks Adidas woke up one day and like, you know what? We want to shoot ourselves in the foot. We want all our board members to lose money. We're going to end this deal with Kanye. Even though Ye was the most important or the most, you know, influential, visible, important thing to happen to Adidas in maybe the last 2 decades or something. They didn't do it because they just felt like it. They did it because Ye did some fuck shit along the way too. He annoyed people. He got into spats. He had arguments. He had falling outs with people. And, you know, one thing we know about the corporate world in general, you have to play the game. That's why we kind of all rate, myself included. That's why I rate Virgil so much. Virgil was able to like get his ideas across while also playing the corporate game. I never feel like Virgil had to like sanitize what he was doing. I feel like he did it and there were maybe some quote unquote compromises or some meeting in the middles, but I don't think he had to like completely sanitize or like dumb down what he was doing. He always kind of got across his overall message. But I feel like with Ye, he's just on some like, if you don't give me exactly what I want, like, fuck you. And obviously that's not the way to go about doing things, right? You have to kind of have a little bit of a to and fro. But he doesn't like that. He doesn't like being spoken in a certain way. He doesn't like being treated in a certain way. Like everything has to be exactly right for him. If you don't do it right for him, he throws his toys out of the pram. And I think Ye, unfortunately, I think personally, like day to day in person, he must be a really hard person to kind of work with. As much as I'm a fan of his and I love him, to work with him day to day, it must be a bit of a stretch. It must be hard, bro. It must be difficult to make that shit work. So I'm not surprised Adidas partnership kind of ended. And if anything, the Adidas partnership ending was a good indication of just how important it is to keep relations good. Because if I remember correctly, one of the Adidas board members the Adidas board member also was on a board of JP Morgan or something like that. Something crazy. Or somewhere where Ye had done his banking. I forgot where it was. And essentially, because he fell out with the board and he did all that fuck shit with Adidas and he got into a spat and they did fuck shit to him, they're alleging, the conspiracy theory is that lady or them people had some way, had a role to play in his accounts being frozen. Because I think the money he had from Adidas, again, it's really weird how it happened, but Adidas paid him some sort of money for the Yeezys. And somehow Adidas were able to like reverse the money. And I think maybe because it's like high amounts of money, but they were able to like put a hold on that money. So they deposited the money to him, were able to kind of take it out of the account, freeze it so he couldn't get a hold of it. Very strange. Close his account. It's fucking odd. But regardless, I love how Ye acts as if like things just happen in the silo. Things just happen without any like, there's no provocation. There's no fucking poking, no nothing. I'm just sitting there minding my business and they send me a termination letter. It's like, come on, Ye. Come on. Anyway, let's continue. The lawsuit claims that Ye treated black employees at Donda, including Phillips, considerably worse than white employees. You know what? That's actually a good thing. That's actually a good thing. One of the best things my parents ever told me growing up was the importance of just how much better, just how much the importance of knowing that you have to try way harder than your, you know, non-black compatriot to get anywhere in life. And that you should never ask for handouts, never be a victim, but you have to try harder. Like, you can't expect to put in the same effort as your compatriot who isn't black and think you're going to get the same results. You have to try 2 times, 3 times, 5 times, 10 times as harder. And sometimes even then you don't get the results that you want, but you have to start from there. And I think that's a good way to approach life, because unfortunately, if you do give your kids the idea like, oh yeah, the world is all sunshine and rainbows, opportunities are the same for everybody, we all get the same chances, we all have the same 24 hours, But some of us have to work, you know, 18 out of those hours, and some of us, you have to work 6. So that's the basic, you know, premise of it all. So that's actually not a bad thing, I don't think. Another one says, representative for Ye and Donda Academy did not immediately respond to the comment. Late last year, as he preparing for new music, Ye put out a statement written in Hebrew. We should have knew he was on some fuck shit when you put an apology out in Hebrew. We should have knew Ye wasn't serious. Apology out in Hebrew, you know, that's fucking so insulting. He put an apology written in Hebrew, which he apologized for the Jewish community for his remarks, writing, "I deeply regret any pain that may have caused." Obviously, he didn't write that, by the way. He definitely doesn't stand by that. He just did that to create peace and most likely just to keep people's jobs up. Because that's the thing I didn't like about Ye when he did the whole, like, burning the boats at fucking Adidas. If I'm not mistaken, just before he had the falling out Adidas, they opened up a small factory somewhere, I'm going to say Italy or France, where they were meant to do way more, like they were meant to kind of increase the amount of production for Yeezys because of the demand for the previous year was really high, but they couldn't meet it. So they opened up this one specific factory that was meant to kind of, you know, add more to the fucking quantities and shit. And because Ye fell out with the thing, that factory closed down and now people are out of a job. So his, you know, his tantrums and shit cost people jobs. So maybe now he suddenly started to realize, okay, cool, I need to kind of chill out a bit and kind of rein it in. That's probably why he apologized, I'd imagine. Because he didn't mean that. He probably didn't write it as well. It continues. I did regret giving cancelled. The newest album, a collaboration with R&B singer Ty Dolla $ign Vulture, has been streaming and it's been number one. Most of the remarks that torpedoed Ye's... oops, let's go back here again. Let's fucking move the thing. Let's continue here. Most of the remarks that torpedoes Ye's corporate deals were made in public, including on social media and on podcast. In the lawsuit, Phillips describes comments Ye he claims Ye made in private. The lawsuit says that during... Honestly, this guy's a psycho. Let's see this thing. What do you say in private? The lawsuit says that during a conversation at the Nobu Hotel, that's definitely a place to talk about Hitler, isn't it? At the Nobu Hotel in Malibu, California, Ye said the Holocaust was fake. He's so dumb. That's the thing about Ye. He's such a genius artistically and creatively, but he's so fucking dumb. Like, he's actually R-worded in the real sense of the word. Like, he takes a lot of pride in saying that, oh, I don't read books. Books are for dumbs. Like, books is like, it's too much information. It clouds your, like, natural proclivity to be creative. It's like, bruh, no. Yay, pick up a book, please. You actually need to pick up a book. Of all people, you actually need a book to inform you of certain things. But Ye thinks books are like mind control. Like, it's just an opinion. It's like, bro, like, he prefers to go with feelings and stuff, like instinct. It's like, come on, Giza, man. Your instinct is that the Holocaust was fake. That's your instinct, right? That's your sixth sense. The Holocaust was fake. Anyway, he called Hitler great, adding Hitler was an innovator. He invented so many things. He's the reason we have cars. Yo, Ye thinks Hitler created Volkswagen, isn't it, or something? He's so fucking dumb. I love him so much. In the same meeting, the lawsuit accuses Ye of making homophobic and anti-Semitic remarks, saying, yeah, I'm going for the gays. First the Jews, then the gays. Oh, that's going to be a good one. That's going to be a good one. Because the Jews already cancelled him anyway. Right? The Jews did a good job in terms of, like, literally nearly wiping away his billionaire status, which he kind of was very proud of. Now you don't really hear Ye talk about his money anymore. Because he's not, you know, I think money was just like it's like a game to him. And because he got that billion, I think the billion was also like the worst thing to happen to Ye. If you're like a Ye hater. Because what that billion did, that billionaire status did, is that it justified all his methods. Because it proved to him that no matter how much of an arsehole he is, no matter how combative he is, no matter how obtuse he is, no matter how narcissist he is, he still was able to garner that amount of money because, by and large, people still love him, despite his, you know, personality defects and flaws and shit. So that billionaire status actually was the worst thing to ever happen to Ye, because it really emboldened him to feel like, yeah, no one can fucking touch me. So, you know, he's probably right in that respect, because he's still got number one album after saying he loves Hitler and Hitler did some interesting things. Like, you know, you can't really debate him on that regard. Like, the fact that he's been able to still bounce back, and especially doing it, you have to think, he didn't do it with, like, you know, Adele. He didn't do the collaborative album with, like, fucking Billie Eilish. He didn't do the collaborative album with Sexy Red. He didn't do the collaborative album with, like, Olivia Rodrigo, with fucking Bad Bunny. You know, he didn't do with all these, like, hot, big people in the market now. He did the collaborative album with Ty Dolla $ign, somebody who people kind of, like, you know, he's obviously great and somebody I rate a lot in the R&B space, but I think outside of that, people don't really probably look for that much. And, you know, one of the hit singles on the album features Rich the Kid, who people don't really care about at all. And he's got one of the best verses on the whole entire album. So he basically proved that he is that guy, unfortunately. You know, if you don't like him, he basically proved, I am that guy. I can say I love Hitler. I can say the Holocaust is fake. I can say all this wild shit and still get number one album. It's kind of wild. It continues. The lawsuit contains a screenshot of a text message. It claims Ye sent to Phillips, taking issue with how he carried out a task. The comment says, I am on some complete Hitler level stuff, minus the gas chambers. So he's okay with Hitler ideas, but he completely dismisses the gas chamber, but then doesn't really want to look at it too much. No, no, no. Gas chambers, you know, everyone's got their, you know, everyone's got their fucking, no one's perfect, right? Oh, he's got that thing about, oh, I'm a Christian, I forgive everybody. God would have forgave Hitler. Okay. It continues. The lawsuit took issue with Ye's conduct at Donda Academy, the school he founded. It claims that Ye told two children enrolled there that he wanted them to shave their heads and that he intended to put a jail at the school that they could be locked in cages. To be fair, the shave our heads thing, I'm not that surprised because if I'm not mistaken, Ye does have this thing about everybody around him has to wear black. When he's, I don't know when he's doing work or when he's just hanging out. Whenever they're like together, if you look closely at the pictures, whenever Ye's moving around, he's with his team, they're always all wearing all black. They never wear any other colours. And Ty Dolla $ign is known to be, you know, like a colour dude. Da, da, da. So I think he does enforce that whole wearing black thing to his team. You have to wear a certain, you know, colour scheme. I think that's the rules. So it wouldn't be, you know, that far-fetched that he'd say, hey, shave your heads, uniformity. You know what I mean? Like, uniformity kind of across the board. And yeah, at the moment, has a shaved head. He's growing his beard. I wouldn't be surprised, right? That kind of monk minimalism type of affair, focusing on the work, stripping back your personal expression and focusing on the work. Maybe there's something to be said for that. The staff quickly distracted the children, the lawsuit says, and escorted them out of the room. In 2022 television interview, Ye said that Donda Academy had more than 80 students and that its mission was to be a performing arts school, to be a design school, an architecture school, a farming school, an automotive engineering school, a computer hardware, and a software school. This is like one of those things that kids say. I want to be a spaceman. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a firefighter, a police officer. I want to make cake. I fucking love it, man. Imagine legitimately putting your kid in a Kanye-controlled school when he doesn't even, you know, respect education like that. You know what I mean? He refuses to read. He's always chastising the school that his kids go to. I forgot what it's called. Sierra Canyon, Sierra Nevada, whatever that fucking school is called. He fucking hates that. So he's clearly got an issue with the education system. Yet he's creating a school. You're like, okay. The suit said that Phillips' daughter and younger brother attended the school and that Phillips' mother had helped him get a job there. Your mum helped you get a job then? You're making a lawsuit. Bro, have some shame. Your mum helped you get a job to work with Ye and now here you are crying that Ye is being Ye. Fuck off. The current status of Donda Academy has to be named in the other lawsuits brought by former employees is unclear. So Ye is out here calling people allegedly fat as well. I saw a quote somewhere there. He was calling people fat. Where is it? I think it might be here, actually. Verbal abuse, calling Hitler, LGBTQ are next. Yeah, that's the one. Telling members of staff they could be fired for being fat. That I'm okay with. I think there are certain brands. I think, to be fair, people really don't really know while going to fashion, but there are certain brands, certain like high street brands, certain like luxury brands, or certain like brands, you know, in department stores where they don't let you work there if you don't look a certain way. I know of certain brands in Selfridges, Harvey Nichols, where if you don't look a certain way, they're not going to hire you. If you're not hot, if you're not in shape, like Saint Laurent, you can't go work at Saint Laurent if you've got a 42 waist. It's not happening. You know what I mean? It's not fucking happening. You want to work at Saint Laurent? You want to wear those fucking cowboy boots? You want to wear skinny jeans and a little blazer and a skinny tie? You got to be like 36, maybe even 34 waist under. Anything above a 40, you're out. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, you're out, just out. You got Wings of Redemption, you're fucking out. So this idea that there isn't this, like, thing, it's dumb. Like, do you think walking into a Vogue office looking like Bella Hadid isn't going to help you? It's going to help you. Now, is it good thing? Obviously not. But let's not lie and say that that's not going to help. So the fact that Ye's like, hey, no fatties, I don't blame the guy, you know? It's a bit, you know, contradictory coming from him because Ye is not exactly in the best shape of his life himself. So for Ye to be calling other people fat and not hiring them, it's a bit hard to take that one, isn't it? But it's his company, he can do what the fuck he wants. So I kind of understand it. But in general, Ye doing Ye things, again, I think this kid got his job from his mum. If you know Ye and you're 20, I think he's at, the kid's at 22 allegedly or somewhere around that kind of lines, you should know what that guy's about. You should know what you're getting yourself into. Crying and complaining about it is a bit lame, to be completely honest. And if anything, you know, it's not going to really change anything either. This behavior he's had it for fucking years. He's been rewarded for it in the most greatest way possible by becoming a fucking billionaire. There's no way he's changing anytime soon. It's not fucking happening. So all this whole hullabaloo, calabaloo, it's over nothing. It's all going to fucking die away and everyone's going to fucking move on. But big up Ye, absolute freak, absolute fucking freak, but I absolutely love him. I absolutely love everything about that man. Moving on. Let's talk about the London Night Czar. I fucking hate, I despise, with all my heart, the London Night Czar, Amy Lammy, whatever her fucking name is, Amy Lammy. I fucking hate her. So if you don't recall, a few years ago, when, what's his name? The mayor of London, Imran Khan, whatever his fucking name is, Sadiq Khan, not Imran Khan, so became mayor in 2016, he appointed this role called the Night Czar. And I think there's a few cities around the world that have them. I think Amsterdam has one. I think New York has one. And the idea behind the Night Czar is that you advocate for like the nightlife industry. And of course, if you live in like Amsterdam, you live in New York, you live in London, all these big, bustling metropolitan cities, the nightlife economy contributes a lot to the whole, you know, GDP, to the whole money made by that fucking city. And I think in London is somewhere in the billions, the nightlife industry. Even though we don't have clubs open till late, the fact that, you know, nightlife probably includes restaurants, nightlife includes probably theatres, nightlife probably includes bars and cocktail bars and pubs and shit. It all kind of, you know, is smooshed in there. And obviously, like, you know, concert halls and shit. London's become like a prime destination for that, even though we're not the best night city in the world. I don't think so, because most of the events you want to go to, or most good events, you know, end before like 12. And if you stay out after 3, there's not a lot of transport to get back home. It's a bit shit. Regardless, she put her in charge. And the annoying thing about it is that when the Night Czar for London was put in place, I first didn't understand it because, if I'm not mistaken, this lady is like Canadian or like American or something. She's like, that's her accent anyway. I'm sure she's a British citizen, but she's not even like from here in that respect. Not to be that kind of guy, because I'm not really from here either, but you kind of get me. I didn't really get the fact that she even got the job. She's not really involved in the nightlife industry. She says she used to like do like club nights in like some shit pub somewhere playing fucking synth pop. Like, no one gives a fuck. No one knows her, right? She's not really like in the club scene, knowing that she's at all, which is odd because I think the Amsterdam Night Czars, or the ones in Paris, or I think New York, were all people that were involved in the nightlife scene. People that run clubs, people that had run fucking big parties, people that were part of fucking agencies, like people that actually plugged in to the fucking industry were involved. Whereas this woman is just like some wannabe politician, activist, person, like nonsense. So I didn't understand in that regard. Then she gets a job and she's ineffective. The whole time she's been in a job, she's been making a crazy, crazy high salary, right? Absolutely doing nothing for the city apart from allegedly making it a 24-hour city, which she can't really take much credit for. The saving of fabric, which I honestly don't think she can take much credit for. But outside of that, absolutely nothing has been done, yet she's claiming 100,000 plus salary and she only works like 3 days a week or something like that. Fucking insane. So she gets a lot of criticism, a lot of pushback online because of her ineffective ability to kind of do her job and the fact that she's a waste of space. And I personally want to know, when is Amy Lammy going to lose her job? Because she's had a job since 2016. Is her job tied to Sadiq Khan's mayorship? And also, how long does a mayor stay in fucking charge in London? Don't we have elections? Don't they have to like end? Is it like a president or prime minister thing where after 2 terms, you have to kind of get out? Why is he still here? 2016 and that nigga's still fucking here. Knife crime is still fucking high. Robbery, all this shit is still high. London's fucking in a mess. Homeless people everywhere. Shit all over the floor. Dogs fucking running riot. Like, why the fuck? Why the fuck is Sadiq Khan still here? And why is Amy Lammy still here? Why are these two bozos still here in this job? It doesn't make any fucking sense. It's super annoying. So, she tried to defend herself online or via a fucking video that she did interview with BBC where she tried to fight a corner about what she's done and she was just waffling, absolutely waffling. So let's actually play the clip here because I think the clip kind of speaks to why I was so annoyed when I fucking saw this fucking news, right? So this is Amy Lammy on BBC Politics talking about all the great work she's done. Now look at her. Look at the difference between Amy Lammy. You see the picture that I showed you, right? On Mixmag. Look at the difference between what she looks like there and look at her now. Because you can tell the stress is getting to her. You can tell this woman's stressed out. She's like fighting for her life because no one likes her. She's fucking stealing a living. She doesn't earn her salary at all. Terrible at her job. Very little to show for what she's done. Her KPI, if she had KPIs, she wouldn't meet any of them. Fucking useless girl. So watch, look at what she looks like now. Look at what she looks like. She looks fucking haggard. It's absolutely wild.
Why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about your role, how it works, and the impact that you've managed to have.
Well, so I was appointed in 20.
Look, she's getting bold. Look at her. She looks haggard. Like, she looks way older. Don't give her a 20, I know. But look, she's developing a bald spot and everything. Like, the job is really, really doing a number on this lady. Like, she's aged like a fucking avocado. Absolutely wild. Listen to her. Listen to this waffle. Listen to this waffle.
2016, by Sadiq Khan, Mayor of London, to help London thrive as a 24-hour city. And that means that I'm able to work with all 33 local authorities. We can't forget the City of London. They're super important to us, to help plan better for our nighttime. And so we're seeing results now. I have to say we inherited an absolute mess from the previous mayor. We had lost a total...
You see that? We have to do a lot of good jobs and good work. And we fucking inherited a mess. No, bitch. Tell us what you did. What did you do? Stop deflecting onto that. We don't even remember who the fucking previous mayor is. We don't even know who that fuck that person was. Talk about the stuff that you did. What have you achieved for London? Tell us what you've done. Fucking hell, bro. Politicians or these people they're fucking useless. And again, this isn't even like a big politician job. This is just like advocating for nightlife. Do you know what I mean? Being the advocate for fucking clubs and shit and representing them when you go to whatever meetings that you fucking go to. You know, talking for their best interest. Representing them. Be able to put a kind of political nicey-nicey spin on stuff. Like, is it really that difficult to do? Come on, bro. Fuck.
Total of 35% of our grassroots live music venues, 50% of our nightclubs, and a whopping 62% of our LGBTQ plus venues under the previous mayor. So we've had to pick up that mess, and the mayor and I have been focused on stemming those closures and helping venues to not just survive, but thrive.
See those kind of taglines? Not just survive, but thrive. What does that fucking mean? Demonstrate. Demonstrable. Gah! She's fucking shit.
And how are you doing that? How are you helping?
Yeah, exactly. How are you doing that?
So one way is through better planning. So just this week, for example, Camden Council passed their nighttime strategy at full council, which was...
That condescending, that teacher thing, like, are you okay? Need something to drink? Oh, wow. I'm sorry to hear that. Like, fuck off with the fucking over-expressions, man. Just talk. What have you done? I've done this, 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 and this, and this. In the next 3 months, we're going to do this, this, and this, and this, and this. We're working on this, this, and this, and this. The previous mission was a mess. Get out of here, man.
A really exciting moment because it means that we're turning the tide. We're starting to plan for our nighttime rather than over-regulating for it.
It's already over-regulated.
Relationships with the boroughs is super important.
It isn't great.
And, you know, that's been seen through the work we've been doing with nighttime enterprise zones, for example, in Bromley, in Woolwich, and in Vauxhall, enabling our high streets to...
London enterprise... What the fuck does that mean? Why are all the clubs closed before 1 a.m? Why can't you go anywhere and club after fucking 4 a.m? Why are all the clubs fucking closing? Why do all the clubs that we have to open at fucking 12? Drum sheds, why are all these places popping up that only open from fucking 12 p.m.? Those are the new ones that are fucking available. Why do we have 10,000 capacity clubs, but not a lot of 500 capacity, under capacity fucking places to go play? Why? Why isn't there a fold in every fucking, you know, side of fucking London? Why doesn't that exist? Why is there only one fold? And even now, if it gets into a bit of trouble or God forbid something bad happens to it, most likely the license gets taken away and the opening times get fucking reduced and it's back to fucking square zero. Come on, bro.
Thrive after 6 p.m. and we've seen footfall, spend and feelings of safety go up. But I'm also super proud, particularly this weekend, you know, we're all thinking about Sarah Everard and her family and friends.
No, come on. Sarah Everard? R.I.P. to that young lady who passed away, who got fucking murdered by that psycho fucking cop. How dare you? How dare you try and mention her name in this shit? You see how egregious, how fucking scummy, how scummy these politicians are. What next? Oh, as our thoughts extend to the people in Gaza, as our thoughts extend to the people in Congo. What the fuck does that have to do with fucking London and what we're going through now? What are you trying to fucking use that fucking tragedy that happened to that young lady who got fucking murdered by a fucking police officer? And don't get me started on that shit with the police covering up that sort of nonsense, right? Super sad fucking story. Jogging out, doing her fucking... I think she just came back from home. But regardless, super fucking, you know, tragic fucking story. Murdered by a fucking police officer, right? And now you are using this as some sort of what? Fucking shield to defend yourself from people like myself questioning why you still have that job despite you not doing anything close to what you should be doing to having that fucking role, especially when you compare it to the other cities. All the other nightstars and the other cities around London, or sorry, around the world, are doing a far better job than she is. She's fucking pathetic, man. Disgusting. Sarah Everard. Wow.
Of the work that the mayor and I have done around women's safety with our Women's Night Safety Charter. 2,100 organizations and businesses across the capital that are signed up, pledging to take action to make our city safer at night for women and girls. And that includes everything from 24-hour gyms to our nightclubs through to the seven...
What other 24-hour gym do we have in London apart from Pure? Please tell me. What other 24-hour gym? What other one? 24 hours a day, whatever one. Whatever branch up 24 hours. Come on, man.
Premier League football clubs here in London.
You don't actually have any powers to enforce any of your suggestions, do you? Does that hamper really the work that you can do and the impact that you can have?
Well, I think it's important that I have really good relationships with the boroughs. And so that is, you know, our power.
Relationship with the boroughs, bro. Come on, man. Come on.
Really depend on...
Is that why fucking Kings and High Street has been fucking decimated? What relationship with the borough... What relationship do you have with Hackney? Sorry, Hackney. What relationship do you have with fucking Hackney? What's the relationship? Oh, okay. Close all the clubs. Open as many fucking cocktail bars as you want. As many restaurants. As many fucking dumb natural wine stores as you want. As many flower shops. Open them all. But all the clubs are fucking gone. Why has it happened on Kings and Road? That whole strip has been fucking decimated. It's been gutted out. And that was one of the most popping places. But even Shoreditch had been fucking decimated. It's not even fun to go out there no more. It's not nothing there anymore. Where's all the cool clubs? Don't exist. Come on, bro.
Partnership working. And that's the most powerful thing that we have here in London. And
how big is your team, your budget?
So we have a team of just four people and a pretty small budget within
a pretty small budget. You get paid 100 grand a year.
Team. But what's most important is that we really over-deliver for...
Oh my God, you don't over-deliver. You don't even deliver. You don't even fucking deliver, bruv. You are, what's that fucking postal service? You are every. She's fucking every, bro. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, file for a fucking refund. You don't even arrive. You don't even arrive, bro. It's like ordering something from fucking AliExpress. Flick of a coin if it's going to arrive or not. Come on, man. Get out of here, bro. Over-deliver. You don't even deliver.
For the money that we are actually allocated.
How do you value that? How do you deliver?
Yeah, how do you measure
how
it?
Do you assess your delivery in terms of the budget that you have?
Yeah, well, one way is the Assembly are able to scrutinize me. And this is one of the issues that was brought up. And actually, the Assembly
Look at them looking at her. Look at them looking at her.
That was brought up.
And look at them looking at her. Look at them looking at her. You see, I'm not the only one. Look at them looking at her. Look at them. Oh, she's chatting shit. She's fucking waffling, mate. What the fuck did she just say? Look at them. Look at their faces. What? It's like when somebody hasn't done the homework or hasn't done the research and presenting at school. Look at them looking at her like, what the fuck is she talking about? She's chatting out of her fucking ass.
Actually, the Assembly have asked 181 questions about my work and since the mayor was last elected.
You need a million questions.
You know, we operate...
Or the same question. Get out. Get fired. Leave. That's what the question that you need. When will you leave? When are you going? Get out of my fucking house. Is that someone that comes to stay over? Obviously, they say welcome. Hey, what's going on, man? Where are you going? You can't be staying here. What's up? Come on, bro. You overstayed your welcome, man. Everyone's gone. The drugs are run out. There's no more drinks. The shops are all closed. Come on, man. Get a move on. Get the fuck out, man. Go back to Notting Hill with your fucking girlfriends, bro. Don't go away.
In full transparency and always very happy to share information with the Assembly.
Yeah, you're paid, what, just under 120,000. It's a substantial amount.
Is that super substantial? Super substantial. 120 grand and you don't even do the job of, like...
It's a really big job.
She's justifying it. She thinks she's justified for that salary. It's a really big job. It requires a big salary and a big girl. Fuck off.
It's a really big job. We're a city of 9.5 million people and, you know, I can point to the successes. You know, saving Fabric was the first thing that I did as Nightsar.
What do you do at Fabric? What do you do at Fabric? Keep a club open. That's one of the worst in London. Where people die like every other fucking month on the dance floor through fucking ket overdoses. Keep a club open that most people don't want to go to because it's a fucking rancid club with fucking overzealous, over fucking physical, over touchy security guards, a fucking entry system that reminds you like you're going to go visit your fucking, you know, friend that got locked up in Belmarsh with the way you have to go up and down and search and tack this and stuff. Like, good sound system, decent lineups, but terrible fucking club. Oh, you kept Fabric open. Woohee. Oh, we're so fucking happy that Fabric is still around. Ah, establishment London. Fuck off, bro. Fuck off.
You know, we recently got drum sheds open in the former IKEA.
Oh, drum sheds. The 10,000 capacity venue that's probably financed by fucking local politicians that people are probably getting brown paper bags allegedly under the fucking table for. A fucking venue that is probably going to host Toyota fucking, you know, marketing events and shit. Like, come on, bro. It's probably subsidized by fucking record labels and shit. Fuck off, bro. Drum sheds. Come on, man. The electricity bill for drum sheds alone could probably run an entire borough. The electricity bill for drum sheds alone could run a fucking entire fucking borough. Fuck off, drum sheds.
Up in North London.
Fucking 12. Who's going to rave at 12 in the afternoon? Who do you fucking take me for? Some fucking teenager to go rave at 12. What time am I waking up then? What time am I doing my first bump? I'm doing my first bump at 10 a.m. in the morning like a fucking nitty. You maybe to take a pill at 11 in the morning to go rave at 12 p.m. At my age? Are you serious? Who do you think I am? Drum sheds. I'll give you a drum.
As well as funding £600,000 for our grassroots live music venues here in London. So all of this, you know, is going to change the way that London operates at night. We are a truly 24-hour city.
No, we're not. That's a lie. We're not a 24-hour city. We're not a 24-hour city, especially if you live in a different part of East. Like, if you, depending on what part of East you live, is wherever or not you're a 24-hour city or not. So by definition, we're not a 24-hour city. Number one, we don't even have 24-hour clubs. There's no venue, I don't think, in London that you could go to for 24 hours, except for a casino. And who the fuck wants to go and drink and get fucking high in a brightly lit CCTV covered venue with loads of people walking around in little fucking waistcoats? Like, who wants that? Who the fuck wants that? I don't give a fuck about gambling. Don't give a fuck about casinos. I don't want to go there. Terrible music, horrible people, shitty drinks. No. There's no place you can go for 24 hours in London. Doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. Apart from if you want to go to Pure Gym and just sit on a weight machine and play your fucking music through your headphones. That's probably it. Maybe people do that. Maybe people are in Pure getting it on, putting their music in a fucking sound system, raving and getting fucking fucked up. I don't know. But there's no way you can go, apart from Pure, apart from maybe Pirate Studios, where else can you go for 24 hours in London out? You can't. It doesn't exist. So she's talking out of her ass.
We've got 1.3 million people who work in London at night and are doing really important jobs, like working for the NHS, like driving our buses, stacking.
Oh, fuck off anyway. Fuck Amy Lammy. Honestly, fuck Amy Lammy. The quicker she gets out of that job, the better. I'm hoping that her job is tied with the, you know, London mayorship. I think it is. I don't think if the new mayor comes in, they're going to keep the same night czar. But I'm hoping somebody else gets that job because she's fucking useless. She's been stealing a living forever. Since 2016, making $100,000 per year, and we've got nothing to show from it. All of our best venues are closed. All the new clubs that get open get fucking shut down. The clubs that are available have to operate in this fucking small, tiny window of opening times. It's fucking shit. London nightlife is fucking garbage, bro. Like, it's been decimated. It's been fucking gutted. It's been absolutely ripped to pieces, and I fucking hate it. I fucking hate it. Lack of options and shit. The only place you can go to is fucking Fold. And again, I love Fold. Love the team behind it. Love what they've fucking done. But it gets boring, bro. I'm not the guy that's going to the same place all the time. It gets fucking boring. Going to the same place all the time. Even though it's got the best sound system, the best community, the best ravers, the best fucking lineup. We know. It's amazing. But come on, bro. It's the same place every fucking weekend. Like, come on, man. Give us something else. Give us something new. Something fresh. But no. Every nice new club, shut down. But guess what? Fabric stays around. Fabric with their fucking airport security team, they fucking stay around. Yeah, great. What a real credit to fucking London. Get fucking fucked. Anyway, returning back to the fucking article. The article itself on Mixmag, where some people criticized it, and we're going to read through for a little bit on it here. In response to the claim, one Twitter user says, honestly, never felt more politically gaslit than have been told London is a 24-hour constantly. Exactly. Never have I felt more politically gaslit than being told this 24-hour city thing constantly. Exactly. Another person says, anyone who says London is a 24-hour city doesn't go out in London. Exactly. It's not a 24-hour city. In some places, you can't get back home on public transport. You can't. In some places, you just can't get back on public transport. You have to walk a certain distance. What 24-hour city are you talking about, bro? Come on, man. They've done some good things with the night tube. Don't get me wrong. I think the night tube has definitely helped a lot of people, especially women in London, because I think like a lot of women probably couldn't go out in parts of like central London. If you live like in east or south or north, it's a bit difficult to get back home. And if you didn't have money for the cab or enough money for the Uber, because nowadays as well, the Uber's prices have gone up as well. You know, whatever recession we're in, Uber prices are now not that dissimilar from like a cab price. So a cab price from like maybe central London all the way to like trendy parts of east might cost you £50, £60. Same sort of thing on Uber. It doesn't really, you know, it's not much difference. So people can't really afford that sort of stuff. After paying for your entry, paying for your drinks, it just becomes a £500 night. It's not necessary. So the night tube has been a really good introduction, because at least with the night tube, some of the main lines in the underground can take you to most of your main points. So you can get from like Oxford Circus to Bethnal Green, which is super important, because at least even if you live in Mile End, you can walk to, you know what I mean, it's a little bit easier than going from fucking Oxford Circus to Bethnal Green on a bus or something. Absolutely horrid. But apart from that, venues are all decimated. Like, most of them don't open that, the ones that are around don't open that long. Crazy fucking laws around noise pollution and shit, so they can't put the music as loud anyway. Like, terrible sound system. Like, just like, yeah, like, get out of here, man, honestly. Another one says, one Twitter user highlights in 2018, councillors approved the licensing policy in Hackney that all new venues in a borough must, exactly, do you remember this? This was one of the worst things. This is what killed the strip in Hackney. That strip in Dawson, this is why it got killed. One Twitter user highlights in 2018, councillors approved the licensing policy that Hackney for all new venues in a borough must follow a core closing hours. The curfew for new venues in Hackney, are midnight on weekends and 11 p.m. during a week. What? That's not a club. That's why the Alibi had to shut down, basically. My fucking favorite club in the world, the place that I kind of, you know, learned how to be a promoter, basically learned how to DJ, had been completely decimated because they kept pulling back the fucking opening hours. I think when I first used to go there, it was open until 4, Then it went to like 3. Then it was 2. Then it was 2:30. Then it was 2:30 only a certain weekend. And then it became 1. And then it was fucking done. Because those places, especially in Dalston, they only were popping around 11. Because usually, from what happened, from what I remember, how I used to go out, not sure if it's different now, people would usually start pre-drinking from Liverpool Street. And if you don't know anything about London, you know, Liverpool Street and Dalston, it's all like one big road, one really long road, maybe like 3 miles long. But you start off at Liverpool Street because that's like the, you know, the city-ish type area where all the fucking cocktail bars are. And then you kind of work your way up until you get to the clubs, which is a bit further down. But now there's no need to go further down anymore because they're all fucking close. So, continues. The curfews for the new venue, However, these times of extended licenses can show the venue can cause no disruption to the area. Responding to the comments in a statement to Mixmag, Lammy referenced the references, the challenges faced by the nightlife industry as a result of the pandemic and the rising rent and business. Bo, you weren't doing a good job before the pandemic comes. Now the pandemic comes, use the pandemic as an excuse. Then it's fucking Sarah Everett. Then it's fucking Gaza. Like, what next? BLM. Fuck you, man. Take some personal accountability. Fuck. Let me reference challenges faced by the nightlife industry as a result of the pandemic, rising rents, business rates, staffing shortages, and the government's cost of living and cost of doing business crisis. The mayor and I have continued to work closely on businesses, venues, and barons. London support them through these challenging and last year's London's hospitality industry sales outpaced the rest of the UK. Oh, guess why? Because there's more of them here. Fucking statistics. Guess why they outpaced it? Because there's fucking more. Concentration of them. You donut. We know the challenges remain and we'll continue to do as well as we can to protect and support venues across the capital. Help new ones to open and work with the councils to make licensing agents and navigate. Support them and support the nighttime strategies to plan better for all aspects of night of life at night. All aspects of life at night. Fuck you, bro. We also continue to stand up for the 1.23 million Londoners who work evenings and nights to ensure a better... Bro, we don't care. Don't try and think that you're being some sort of like altruistic, oh my God person. No, focus on the nightlife. Don't be like, oh, now we're looking for like, we're going to help out nurses and shit. Fuck you, bro. And to ensure better paying conditions as we keep the city working throughout the night. The nightlife star wrote an op-ed on Independent in which she details she's making differences in the nightlife industry. The 24-hour city claim continues in her statement as she says London is the best. It's not a 24-hour city though. This is a lie. It's not a 24-hour city. It's a fucking lie. If they mean 24-hour city in that the transport stays open 24 hours, kinda, cool. But that doesn't mean it's a 24-hour city. You can't even, there's not a lot, like, Central London closes after, like, 1 a.m. What can you go into at Central London? An off-license? You can't even go to Weatherspoon after 1. I don't think so. There's not many places open, even in Central London, after 1. So what are you talking about, bro? Let me reference her instrumental role in securing the future opening of Surrey Quays. Fuck. You're talking about, honestly, these 5,000-plus capacity venue places. We don't care, bro. We don't care. We don't care. We need more 500 to 1,000 capacity venues. That's what we need in London. Way more of those venues. Even I'd say way more than under 500 capacity. We need more of those venues around London, especially around the whole of London. Not just in fucking East or in South. We need them everywhere. So that effectively what that would do, in my opinion, if you have more folds around London, it spreads the fucking, it spreads the load. It's, you know, for lack of a better term, it kind of disperses all the demand and it kind of helps to ease all of the pain points, so like all of the fucking antisocial behavior that occurs only in East can now be spread across London and maybe it'll kind of ease level antisocial behavior. All of the fucking strains and stresses it puts on the, you know, public transport, it can now help to spread out around the area. It can make people explore new different places. It may actually help to kind of bolster new areas or areas that have been a little bit down in dumps, like how Ford has done to Canning Town. Now there's a lot of people who would never have moved to Canning Town, even though I'm from there, my family lives there. They would, you know, they would never have lived in Canning Town or Custom House because it's a bit of a rough area. But now because Fold's there and the studio's opening and it's cheaper rent, blah, 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 it helps to kind of bolster the local economy. So all those things can help. But again, no. It's just fucking drum sheds and fucking, you know, print works. Who the fuck cares about that? Who's moving next to print works and drum sheds? Come on, man. Last year it was discovered that Emmy Lammy had scored a 40% pay rise from September 2021. Honestly, this woman's winning. She's so bad at her job, but she still gets pay rises, man. Honestly, man, it helps to be fucking redacting it. she saw her salary go from 83,169 to 100,016 crowns in a fucking recession. During a recession, during a global pandemic, her salary went up. Everyone's getting fired. Everyone's having to downsize. Everyone's having to trim the fat, cut back on their expenses, move away, move jobs. Her salary gets increased. God damn it. Amy Lamy is a fucking G. What's this person says? This person says, bruf, London 24-hour city. Shops aren't even open much longer than small towns. Exactly. Exactly. That's the depressing thing about when you go outside London. The depressing thing about outside London is that most places, I remember when I went to Hastings, that was a real shocker. When I went to Hastings to go visit my friend, I remember being a bit like perturbed because if I'm not mistaken, in Hastings or those type of areas, the pubs close like 10 or 11 p.m. So what the pubs do is that they'll have a drink promotion deal from like 5 to like 7 to get people in early. So they know people are going to be out from work. So they want to get them in early to get loads of drinks, to get fucked up and put money through the till. So they'll have like a half price drinks or 2-for-1 deal between 5 and 7. But then they'll close at 11. So you're going in there after work or whenever from like 5 to 7. You're getting fucked up on those discounted drinks. You then get kicked out of that pub at 11, already steaming. You still want to go out though. So then you go to the nearest club. And the nearest club is, guess what? How long that's open till? 1 or 2 a.m. So you have another short window. And then those clubs also have deals in place where they say, hey, if you come to this club before 12, we can give you 3-for-1, 2, whatever. So there's all these deals that are in place to get you in early. Then you end up drinking loads. And by the time you leave at 1 a.m., you are fucking smashed beyond smashed. And of course, antisocial behavior, of course, a fucking mile-long queue outside the fucking kebab shop because everyone needs to eat something to soak up all the booze. Like, of course, people pissing all over the street. You smell fucking urine in the air all over the place. Like, it actually creates, it's like a domino effect because of all the closing times are so fucking cramped in, which is why when you go to places like Berlin, it's such a fucking breath of fresh air because everything's open until super late. Like, you've got cocktail bars that are open until 6 a.m. So there's no need to rush because you got all the time in the world to drink and have a good time. So you kind of space it out a bit and you can kind of go to a club at 2 a.m. in the morning and still have a good time and leave at 8 in the morning if you want. That still exists. So it helps to kind of, you know, it helps to sort of like mediate or kind of level out your fucking raving. So it's not all fucking like Project X, steamy go. Obviously, the sad thing about it is that on the flip side, people do get lost in the sauce and they get a little bit crazy over there in Berlin. But I think that ability to kind of keep things a bit open, like time-wise, allows people to kind of pace themselves a little bit better. And I think in England, we need that. We need that because as a country where, you know, I can contest or admit for myself, you know, when it comes to boozing and stuff, once you get one in, you're suddenly fucking just knocking them back. And you're not even enjoying the drinks. You're just knocking them back to get fucked up. That's the British, that's the English way. So we actually do need a little bit of a flexible, open-ended opening time to kind of get us back to drinking normally, like the Europeans do. Our continental neighbors don't drink like us. You go to Italy, you go to Spain, you go to France, you go to Germany. They take their time and they enjoy their drinks. They savor it. So you go to some bars, they have fucking glasses that are chilled. In London, you probably get most of your pints poured in a fucking plastic cup. God damn. Choose on a 24-hour. Everywhere has some kind of curfew. Nothing here is 24-hour. Exactly. Another person says, the mayor of London has turned off replies to this tweet for obvious reasons. London's 24-hour policy is a joke and no one's looking to it to invigorate their nighttime economy. Exactly. Another person says, wrote this to add my little, relatively new voice to the discourse on London 24-hour city. The person says, Amy Lamy is not responsible for the decline of London city's economy, but has a purely advisory role, little to no statutory powers. The Night Czar needs three things to be more effective: greater strategic oversight on licensing, flexible funding grants, and regular engagement with stakeholders. City Hall has delivered a few nighttime policies, some of them effective, but councils have the most powers, levers, and to affect the development of the nighttime businesses. Council licensing policies decide the fate of what venue can and can't do. Their waste, planning, culture, economic development, Economic development policies can help nighttime businesses succeed or shut down, but councils themselves are in a financial distress. So in the absence of reliable funding, a Night Czar needs to be radical, engaged, and a champion to all large venues. Guess what? Guess what, Daniel? Amy Lammy isn't none of those things. She's not fucking radical. She's not engaged. She's not a champion. She's a fucking loser, a bozo. She needs to get out of the fucking job. There's no giving her notes to fucking do a better job. Get the fuck out. You're useless. Leave. Please, if you don't mind. Get the fuck out. Go back to Notting Hill. Go to fucking, I don't know, Tatty Devine offices and make some fucking plastic jewelry. Whatever you fucking do, get away. We don't fucking want you. You're fucking useless. That's the fucking name of the game. Okay? Aggie has spoken. Aggie has spoken. Okay? That is the deal there. Oh. Moving on from that one. I'm not going to lie. When I saw this story, I was hoping. I was crossing my fingers. I was really hoping and praying to the Lord above. Please don't let this be some black boys. Please don't let this be some IC3s. Please don't let this be some brothers. But of course, it's some brothers that are responsible for this. Absolutely horrible, tragic, tragic fucking story. I remember when it fucking broke the first time. And I think the alleged story, again, I don't know if this is true, but allegedly the story was this young man, Cody Fisher, was in a club somewhere. And I think he stepped on someone's shoe. And that turned into some sort of altercation. And then the kid ends up losing his life over someone stepping on your shoe. Like, nonsense fucking argument. Stupid way to lose someone's life. Stupid way to everyone to throw away their life. The people that murdered him, that he's losing his life. The families that are fucking broken from the back of it. Absolutely tragic, tragic fucking story. And it fucking broke my heart when I heard about it. So it's good to see at least justice has been done. The people that were responsible for it are in prison now. But fuck, man, how sad is the story? The title is "Too Guilty of Murdering Footballer Cody Fisher in a Crane Nightclub Stabbing." There he is there. You know, very young man. I think he's in his early 20s. Dying in that circumstance is absolutely horrible. It says two men have been found guilty of murdering a footballer who was stabbed to death on a dance floor in a nightclub over a petty incident 2 days earlier. Cody Fisher, 23, was attacked by a masked group at Crane Nightclub in Birmingham with more than 2,000 people inside on the 26th of December, 2022. I've always said Birmingham is equivalent to a failed state, and I maintain that. I've been to Birmingham a few times, and again, no disrespect to my Birmingham fans or Birmingham viewers or Birmingham, you know, watchers, wherever you are. But Birmingham is a failed state. Like, you know, the government's fucking failed that. Failed. It's failed it. It's fucking horrible. It's one of the most depressing places to go to in the UK. And I'm not surprised something like this would happen there because, you know, depression begets depression, shit environment, crabs in the barrel mentality, whatever, hate, all that shit, it's probably in there. But again, it doesn't excuse what the murderer's done because it's fucking vile. It continues. It was revenge after he had brushed past Remy Gordon in 23 in a busy bar. Brushing past somebody now is, you know, paramount to you having to kill them. Imagine how loose and reckless and fucking just chaotic kids are nowadays. Brushing past somebody the wrong way amounts to you having to lose your life. That's the thing I've always said, like, the thing I've always hated about this newer generation, or just the vibe nowadays, everything has to be fatal. Why can't there be an altercation that happens where you exchange words, where you maybe get into a bit of fisticuffs, and you leave it there? Why does it always have to exchange into, like, a lethal action? Like a permanent result? Like, okay, you brush past me, you spilled a bit of drink on my jacket, I have to kill you. Why does it always be like that? Why can't it just be like a exchange of words, maybe some really heavy, deep meaning, whatever, you know, offensive words, maybe some punches thrown, and that's it? Why does it always have to extend to violence and to guns and fucking knives and shit? It's fucking depressing, man. It really is. Especially because I think, like, there's probably a scenario where that sort of stuff in some psychotic society would be a justifiable kind of, you know, response. But for somebody brushing past you in a nightclub, come on, bro. Gordon and Cammy Carpenter, 22, were convicted of murder on Monday. Mr. Fisher's mother described Tracy as described the pair as evil. I agree with that. They're definitely fucking evil. I definitely fucking agree with that one. The weapon, a 6-inch long blade serrated on both sides, was left buried in the sun. Oh my God, bro. The details. R.I.P. to Cody, man. R.I.P. to Cody Fisher. Imagine the pain. The knife was left buried in the son's chest. has been smuggled into the club. Again, look at the security at these nightclubs. They search you like they're searching you through an airport, but somehow a kid's able to bring in a 6-inch long blade. Rambo fucking blade. Come on, man. It had been smuggled into the nightclub, the court heard, with the prosecutors describing the cursory security checks on the night. As well as being a semi-professional footballer, Mr. Fisher taught PE at the schools, and his mother said that he had loved teaching young children. He had more living to do, so much more love and kindness to give the world. A third defendant, Regan Anderson, 19, was found not guilty of murder after a 10-week trial. The CCTV footage shows the beat-up of the aftermath of Cody Fisher. It started in the pizza shop, of course. The court heard that Fisher made unavoidable contact with Gordon in a trivial incident in Pop World in Sully Hill in Christmas Eve, which led to him trying to track him down. They didn't even happen in the club. It happened outside the club. Oh, my God. It didn't even happen in the midst of the fucking booze, whatever, ambience. It happened after. They had to chase this guy down because he brushed past them. Prosecutor Michael Duck KC told jurors, "There was no doubt Gordon was looking for trouble, wanted Fisher to apologize and seek his forgiveness. But he was not going to apologize because he'd done nothing wrong," he said. Oh, no. So they go into one of those altercations. You're not going to say sorry, you're not going to say sorry. Boom. Less than an hour after the encounter that night, Pop World, Gordon sent messages in Snapchat group saying he was in with several friends, appealing to help identify Mr. Fisher and threatened to shank him. "Who knows this little peep squeak?" He posted a photograph, arrow pointed to Fisher, along with the caption, "Man think he's bad. Pussy you. Posh you." And again, look at the fucking perpetrators. What more needs to be said about that? Mr. Duck said Gordon of Coughton Street, Birmingham, was set on retribution and ultimately was led to the loss of Cody Fisher's young life at the Crane nightclub. Jurors were told of other messages in the defendant's Snapchat group in the days before Crane event, in which Gordon and Carpenter talked about whether masks could be worn and if weapons could be taken inside the club. Mr. Fisher, a former Birmingham City FC Academy member, God damn it, man, proper baller, innit, had also been played for a number of non-league Midlands clubs, including Bromsgrove Sporting and Stratford Town. Big up Stratford Town. Had gone to Digbeef nightclub with his girlfriend and best friend Dan Van and others to see DJ they liked. Sam Newsy, a close friend of Mr. Fisher, who'd met Gordon 6 months earlier, told jurors how he had tried to persuade Mr. Fisher to leave Crane after seeing Gordon and several others wearing ski masks and balaclavas several hours before the attack. So these kids came into a nightclub with balaclavas and ski masks on, with shiesties on. Fucking hell, man. Security, like, that's the thing. These kind of clubs shouldn't exist. Like, why is that club still open? Hopefully it's not open anymore, but that's a club that should lose a license. Not a club that like stays open a bit too long or plays the sound really loud. No, man. A club that allows kids to go into a nightclub with a 6-inch blade and wear fucking ballys and fucking ski masks on, like, that's a club that should be closed. He said Gordon has asked him, "Is your boy Cody here?" And he replied he was not. However, Mr. Newsy said he became concerned we were going to be outnumbered and obviously potentially get hurt. Shortly after 11:30 p.m., up to 10 men approached Fisher, who was standing with his girlfriend, Jess Chatwin, and best friend Dan Van. Mr. Van told the court a large crowd with masks up to their noses asked Fisher to go outside before one headbutted him, knocking his head backwards before punches were thrown. He then fell to the floor after being stabbed in the chest. Imagine, you already, there's 10 of you. There's 10 of you and one guy. You have to stab him. Fucking honestly, man, some of these guys deserve, like, that's why we need fucking capital punishment to come back. I swear to God, sometimes in these cases capital punishment does need to be reintroduced. 10 guys, one dude, you're already gonna rush him and beat him up anyway. Why need to have a knife? You could potentially kill him just with your headbutts, just with your punches anyway, depending on how he falls on the floor. But then you have to go to a certain extent to stab him in the chest. Honestly, man, bury them under the jail. Fuck them all. He then fell to the floor after being stabbed in the chest. CPR was administered by security staff, but the blade had penetrated his main valve of his heart, the post-mortem examination later showed. God almighty, man. That's him there. Who knows his people is due to shank him up. People advertising premeditated murder on Snapchat, you know. They make the police job so hard, so easy, innit? Fucking hell. His killers left the event, but just 45 minutes later, CCTV showed Gordon mocking and smiling about the stabbing the court heard. He went to a pizza takeaway where he was seen on the cameras smiling as he made his kicking motion and repeated that he had taken place. Carpenter, who left the club in his Audi with his friend, admitted to him that he stabbed the individual in the chest, left the weapon at the scene. Fucking hell. He arrived there in different clothes and bought a pizza and out. Honestly, this is evil, bro. You killed a man and then you went to buy a fucking 7-inch pizza. Nah, you deserve death. You deserve fucking death. Like, put you across the train tracks and run a train slow over your legs. And just keep moving your body incrementally up the fucking train tracks. Honestly. Man went to go buy a pizza after fucking shanking somebody and killing them. Cool. The group Snapchat also contained messages from the associates saying that the club had been taped off, and man says he's dead, with another replying, he is. Oh, good. He's defo dead. Trying to figure out how to get this in a good... Jesus Christ, bro. Mrs. Newey, who had told jurors how Gordon had had rung him after the stabbing, said during a 9-minute call, literally instantly, the first thing he said is, "I'm not going to lie. I just banged both your boys." Fucking hell. Mr. Gordon of Cofton Street said, "Just wrapped up Cody and wrapped up Dan, knocked them both out clean, dead, not awake." The case was brought as a joint enterprise prosecution where more than one person could prosecute for a murder if they're involved and foreseen that Miss Fisher had been seriously hurt. Yeah, I don't know, man. RIP Cody Fisher. That's the only person that matters here. Fuck the fucking murderers. RIP to Cody Fisher. Thoughts and feelings go out to his family. I can't imagine what they're fucking going through. Super young kid, super handsome, going through, you know, still got his whole life ahead of him, playing football, helping out in the local school. Imagine all the kids that love him as well, who have kind of grown to, you know, love him. He's probably going to be in their lives for a long time, be able to see them grow up and shit. Like, life completely been decimated at that point. Girlfriend seeing that happen, best friend can't help. Like, just horrible all around. Absolutely horrible. Again, thoughts and prayers go out to his family. And I don't know how they're going to get through this, really, but hope they do, because this is such a tragic situation. But the only thing that could be a silver lining of this fact is the fact that the killers have been thrown in prison and they're probably going to be in there for life, which is a good thing. But fucking hell, man, this is the kind of thing where you want capital punishment to come back, honestly. But yeah, RIP to Cody Fisher. RIP to Cody Fisher. Moving on. We have to catch up on the one and only. We have to catch up on the one and only. The one and only Lizzo. We have to. My girl Lizzo B. Eating is so bloody annoying. I don't know how else to put this. So, as you guys know, Lizzo made a post recently where she said she was announcing she was quitting music, right? A lot of people celebrated, which is really bad. A lot of people were kind of celebrating, like, yay, she's gone. Fuck this girl. She's fucking annoying. Blah, 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 blah. But me personally, I'm actually like her music. I think she's really talented as a musician. Clearly, she can play instruments. She can produce. She can sing, songwrite. It's all over the place. And especially considering how big she is as a performer, she's really good. You watch some of her live shows, and she's fucking amazing on stage. Like, the kind of contrast between her and Summer Walker is fucking interesting, because she's probably got more talent in her left pinky than Summer Walker, but Summer Walker is, you know, infinitely more popular and bigger star than she is. You know, whatever reason, who knows what the reason is. But a big part of why probably she hasn't resonated with people is that she has a very unlikable personality, which is really strange, because usually people love big girls, right? They're usually kind of bubbly, fun, kind of carefree, whatever, but she has such a bad, you know, reputation online and how she comes across, people kind of don't really find it hard to kind of root for her. And obviously recently it's become more difficult because of the case that's happened with her backup dancers, you know, basically, you know, putting out allegations there that she's a meanie, she's a bully, she fat shames, and she's definitely not the person that people, she kind of portrays to be online, which I think has done a lot more damage to her reputation than actually anything else. Because I think, similar to Ellen DeGeneres, who kind of, you know, existed a lot on that kind of, oh, I'm this happy-go-lucky person, hugs, hugs, hugs. Even something like Oprah as well. I think even the Oprah thing with Taraji P. Henson, whatever. I think those type of people who kind of rely on being the, like, happy, nicey-nicey person, when it then gets revealed that they're not that person behind closed doors, it does do a real big number on their kind of, you know, success or lack thereof, because, you know, it's kind of, you feel like you've kind of been lied to. And I think with Lizzo, she hasn't really recovered from that still. Even though she did a good job in terms of, like, ignoring the counselling and just basically, you know, being out there. I think she was the first person to do, like, Andrew Huberman, where she just kind of kept going out, kept being on social media, like, nothing changed, even though there was this massive fucking lawsuit about her, her kind of accusers going and interviewing on TMZ, all these articles. She didn't fucking care. She just kind of kept powering through. But I guess behind the scenes, it hasn't been working. That's probably still in the back of her head, the lawsuits or whatever, the controversy around that, the fact that she can't really speak to media without addressing that, the fact that the music isn't resonating, she's just not liking it. So she probably needs the attention. So she went online, said she's quitting music. But not even 24 hours later, I even said in a clip when I posted it the other day, when I spoke about it on the other podcast, I said, as much as I think this might be somewhat true, it also felt like a little bit of a cry for attention. Like, no one's talking about me. I'm not in a news cycle anymore. No one cares if I go out without any pants on. Like, whatever. No one's even talking about her fatness anymore, because that was even a big thing. No one fucking cares. Everyone's kind of moved on from Lizzo. She kind of probably felt like she was out of the conversation. She just wanted to insert herself back in again. It's like crying. So not even 24 hours later, she's already getting online, copying pleas, and trying to clarify what she meant when she said quit. She said quit on the fucking statement. It was pretty clear what she said. But now she wants to clarify and let us know that, hey, I'm not really quitting, guys. Don't worry. It's okay. It's like, no one was worried. We didn't care. But this is Lizzo trying to explain to us why she said what she said and that she's not actually quitting. It's fucking hilarious. Let's play this clip for you.
I...
This lady, what? Man. Oh, hold on. Let's play this properly. I want to hear her do this properly. Let's get this properly on here. Because this lady is fucking incredible. The lack of shame this woman has is fucking startling, bro. Absolutely startling. Let's put a quote down. Let's go there.
I want to make this video because I just need to clarify. When I say I quit, I mean I quit.
Also, girl, what the fuck are you wearing? Did you need to do this clarifying message like this? What the fuck are you wearing? What is that bikini top? What is that makeup? What is that fucking eyeshadow? What is that hair? What is that wig? Like, what is going on? What are you doing, girl? What are you doing? Come on, Lizzo. I like you and stuff, but what are you doing? Titties unsupported. Bikini up, like, what is going on here? Why are you doing this to us? I want to clarify. Like, why are you wearing this and then you're clarifying this? Like, why? Come on, Lizzo, bro. Another, again, attention, like, the attention seeking is just incredible. And the funny thing about Lizzo is that she's actually talented. She doesn't need to do this. Like, oh no, you can do it, but back it up with the music. Like, it's just purely attention seeking. Look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. But there's nothing to actually show from it. Put out a song, put out an album, put out an EP, music video, something, bro. No, let me just show you all this shit. Then you can comment on this. Then if people comment on that and they fat shame her and stuff, then she starts crying. Then becomes a victim. Like, it's almost like she's giving you bait to, like, insult her so that she can have another thing to cry about. I'm the victim. Oh, my God. What do you say about my boobs? What do you say about my fucking love handles? What do you say about my face? It's like, oh, get out of here, Lizzo. I like you, but you're exhausting, girl. You're fucking exhausting.
Giving any negative energy attention. What I'm not going to quit is the joy of my life, which is making music, which is connecting.
But you didn't say that in a statement, Lizzo. You probably went to this. Lizzo seems quite intelligent. She seems like she went to college. She seemed like she got probably good grades. She probably comes from a good family. You know how to use your words, Lizzo. Come on. You're not fucking Kodak Black. You know how to use your words. You didn't drop out of elementary school. Come on, bro. You didn't say you're quitting because you want to quit bad energy. You said you want to quit because you want to quit music. God damn it.
Because I know I'm not alone. In no way, shape, or form am I the only person who is experiencing that negative voice that seems to be louder than the positive.
Don't get other people involved. Talk about yourself. Oh, we're all experienced. What are you going to talk about? You're going to talk about fucking... imposter syndrome. Oh, I feel like, come on, man. Like, whatever. Okay, cool. Imposter syndrome. Cool. We're lonely. Cool. Everyone's lonely. Everyone feels imposter syndrome. What next? Come on, girl. Talk about yourself. Don't, like, get everyone else involved in your nonsense.
Positive. If I can just give one person the inspiration or motivation to stand up for themselves.
No one's inspired by you. You don't stand up for yourself. You just cry and complain online. You don't stand up for yourself. Lizzo does not stand up for herself ever. All she does is cry and complain and you know, and go back to being a victim. She loves being a fucking victim. She doesn't stand up herself. What's she talking about?
Say they quit letting negative people win, negative comments win, then I've done even more.
Sorry, girl. You're too old. You're too experienced to be in this whole negative. You know what the game is. You know how the game is. You know how people troll online. You know, like, you kind of play into it as well. It's like Sam Smith complaining about the comments he gets. I think he's a bit more clever. He's a bit more astute. He's a bit more on point in terms of like how to use the internet, how to use clickbait, rage bait to get people. You probably will wear certain things, or you probably do a show in a certain way because he knows it triggers people online. And he doesn't really cry and complain about it. I don't think he even posts on social media, to be fair. Like, himself, like, making statements. That's how you're meant to play the game. Because Sam Smith probably has way more fans than he has haters anyway. The haters are just vocal. But the haters also help to keep him, you know, relevant and in the timeline and in the news cycle. So it's all well and good. You just kind of play the game. Yes, you're going to have some points where you're going to, you know, you're going to read some comments that are probably going to get to you and they're going to make you cry on your pillow. But it's part of the fucking game. It's like a to and fro. It's like a little dance. If you engage in it, you have to kind of expect to get a little bit back as well. It kind of is what it is. But this girl is just like crying for crying's sake. Why doesn't everyone just love me unequivocally? Girl, none of us are your family. None of us are your best friends. We're just randoms on the internet. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not that serious. Come on.
Than I could have hoped for. With that being said, I'm going to keep moving forward. I'm going to keep being me. Once again, I just want to say thank you.
Don't change at all. Don't change anything about you. Don't do any self-reflection. Don't do any fucking internal work. Don't do any therapy. Don't do any fucking whatever, introspection. No. Just keep on being me. Like, yeah, cool. Feelings, me. Yeah.
Love that I've received, whew, means more than you know.
Oh, fucking hell, man. Lizzo. I like you, but you're making it hard to like you. I swear to God, man. You're super insufferable. She is very, 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 very insufferable. Like, incredibly so. And it's hard because she's not somebody where you can kind of ignore the insufferability. It's kind of part of the parcel. You can't just ignore it and listen to the music because the music never comes. Like, it's just whatever. Like, when's the last time she put out a fucking song? Or a song that anyone cared about? 2022 or something? Like, come on, man. Like, is that what you've been doing in your name? Lizzo's been fucking eating. You haven't been making tunes. You've just been fucking eating. Is that what you've been actually doing? Because where's the songs? Where's the tunes? Where's the fucking rhythms? Come on, bro. And look, if you wanted more an example of a lack of rhythm and lack of fucking things, look what happened straight after that post where she's trying to clarify what she said about quitting, which she is quitting, right? She said she's going to quit. Now she's trying to clarify it. Straight after that fucking post, look what she posted. Straight after that post saying, I'm not quitting, look at what this fucking woman posted. Then you'll see why this lady is insufferable and why certain people have a hard time liking her. Look what she posted soon after that post of like, I'm not quitting anymore. The same fucking annoying bathing suit, the same unsupported fucking titties, the same awful makeup, the same awful fucking wig. And look at them. Hear the message.
To my Yiddy haul. This is the plunge one piece. Let me tell you guys something.
So that apology or that clarification was to sell these fucking bodies, these fucking bikini things. Of course. So the whole quitting thing was part of a rollout to drop these fucking bikinis. I'm quitting. The whole world crazy. The whole world. Oh yeah, thank you. Go away. She realized, oh shit, people actually want me to quit. So you couldn't just stall it. So she went out, clarified it, and now it's starting selling these fucking bikinis. That's why we got this fucking outfit when she was kind of clarifying her comments. The lack of shame. The lack of fucking shame. The hubris on these people. Fucking hell, bro. Now she's saying these bikinis look like fucking kites of people. All right, cool.
Like, it is swimwear that really, truly has you in there. The back
in there?
Is
what?
I feel like I can show you guys, though.
In there? Everything's out there. Nothing's in there. You know, like, I've never understood people who want to wear clothing that just sucks in their fat. You're better off wearing something that fits you and you're comfortable as opposed to trying to make it look like you're smaller than what you are, because we know you're not. We can see you're not small. We can see you're fat as shit. It's okay but just wear something that makes you feel comfortable, but it doesn't need to kind of like suck you in like you're wearing a fucking corset. It makes no sense, really. I've never understood that way of like, you're rather off wearing something that fits you, that make you comfortable, than trying to suck in your fat with like Lycra and shit. Let's see what she's showing on the side. Look, she's giving, her body definitely isn't tea. Her body might be fucking, I don't know, hospital coffee, but it's not tea.
Oh, yeah, the back is cheeky, it's not thongy.
I love it, man. Her confidence is fucking supreme, though. Her confidence is supreme. Because in her head, she's fucking sweetie. Do you know what I mean? In her head, she's fucking sweetie. In her head, she's fucking, who am I trying to think of? She's fucking Tyler. Do you know what I mean? In her head, she's fucking Shensia. Like, in her head, she's fucking Ari. Do you know what I mean? Like, but God, look at the material.
We got the spaghetti straps in the back. Damn, I look good. Like, I know the tankini thing is a thing, but can we also put one pieces back in the ring? Like, Baywatch level, just running on the beach.
Running. I'd love to see her run, to be fair. To be fair, I wouldn't be surprised if she's crazy athletic. I wouldn't be surprised. She's got that kind of big girl posture and body confidence. Well, it wouldn't surprise me if she's actually crazy athletic. Like, to the point where she, like, she's got a high fucking vertical jump. She's fucking got fast twitch fibers. She can fucking cut up really quickly. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if she's, like, crazy athletic, actually. She's actually really good at volleyball and shit. Like, freakishly athletic. It actually wouldn't surprise me.
Oh my gosh, I have to save somebody. Jump in the water. I love her. Let's move on to the next suit. We have our plunge in iconic black in this incredible maroon color.
And the apology blue.
Plunge in this really pretty.
And the apology blue. That's the blue that she did her thing. The apology fucking blue. Honestly, man, it's all a fucking rollout. It's so scammy, man. So scammy.
Deep teal. But let me introduce you to our next suit. The scooped bralette. Ugh. You know I always have to keep it funky.
To be fair, this one looks a lot better than the other one. But still, man, like, yeah.
With y'all.
For a big girl, just like observation-wise, for a big girl, she's got, like, very small boobs, isn't it? It's odd when that happens, isn't it? Usually fat girls, sometimes the fat goes to your tits or goes to your bum, but she's got, weirdly, really small tits for somebody as big as she is. I wonder if that's a good thing. If you're a big girl, would you actually rather not have like massive mummy milkers? Because it helps to kind of like, you know, there's just too much going on there. You have to support it. It's just uncomfortable and shit. Or do you prefer to have really small like tits? Or like, you know, is that a thing? I don't know.
I always said this was not the suit for me. I always thought that I was a plunge girl because I liked the way that my yitties looked in it. But after, there's something about this.
Anyway, fuck Lizzo, honestly, get fucked. You sold us a scam. You said you were quite quitting music just so you could kind of come, you know, fucking roll out your fucking stupid, you know, fat girl bikinis. Honestly, horrible shit. Your fans should be ashamed of you, to be honest, using, you know, like, basically kind of like trauma baiting people, right? Basically, because her fans probably were really upset that she quit music. Maybe she's got a tour planned. Maybe she has some shows coming up. Her fans probably weren't that happy when she announced it. And now, come on, bro. Now she's not quitting music and she's putting out fucking bikinis. Now she's what? Now she's trying to be Kim Kardashian. Now she's trying to make what? Not Skims. What's she trying to make? Like Fims. Like what? Like Mims. What the fuck is she going to be making? Come on, bro. Skims for fat girls. Is that what she's doing? Cool. All right. Whatever you say. Just focus on the music, girl. Just focus on the blood clot music. But no, focusing on the music is too much work. Let's cry about nonsense things. Let's cry about nonsense things. Let's cry about nonsense things. Continuing on. So, this article, courtesy of Hypebeast, is for me a really good indication of just how much Nike have fallen off. And the fact that I think innovation overall, especially when it comes to sneaker design, has been down in the dumps for a long time. And obviously Nike are probably one of the main culprits of it. And this article, courtesy of Hypebeast, that says Nike's lack of innovation caused sales to drop, says JD Sports CEO. And I think I have a direct correlation as to why I agree with what the JD Sports CEO has to say about Nike's lack of innovation causing their sales drop. Because, you know, JD Sports, if you know anything about, you know, UK retail, is one of our prime sportswear retail stores here in the UK. Mostly sportswear, streetwear type of clothing, mostly Nike. It's a place where you go get your Nike tech suits. It's a place where you go get your Air Maxes, your Air Forces. And, you know, they're just known for, like, you know, lacing up the youth of the UK, right? From anywhere between the ages of, like, 18 to 45, if you're fucking chronic, right? You're still out there wearing tech suits and shit. Anyway, I feel like what this JD Sports CEO is relating a lot to what I'm going to show you next in terms of another picture of a shoe coming out. So JD Sports CEO Regis Schultz is pointing the finger at Nike for the UK retailer's chain decrease in sales, Bloomberg reported. During the company's first recent calling, Schultz reported that like-for-like sales had fallen 3.1% during the last quarter of 2023, although the retailer anticipated an upturn in the coming months due to the soccer championships and the Paris Olympics. Asked by analysts about JD Sports' relationship with Nike, who reported last week their sales were down, Schultz blamed the brand's supposed lack of innovation. And I agree with that. Too many retros, no new shoes, innovation really in the toilet for lack of a better of it, and just kind of going through the motions because they're the main leader basically when it comes to sportswear, and they just kind of take the position for granted and they kind of take the foot off the pedal instead of like doing an Apple, where Apple are always innovating, always trying to push, you know, pushed it further. The Apple Vision Pro, say what you want about it, but at least it's something different to everything else that we see from most phonic electronic companies out there. So they're constantly trying to push things forward. Nike resting on their laurels. It continues. Nike has been so successful, but they just stopped a little bit Nike has been so successful, but they just stopped a little bit bringing in new stuff. At the same time, Adidas is doing very well. New Balance is doing very well. Exactly. I've noticed that too in the streets. I think most of you have noticed it too. If you live in a metropolitan city, you'll know that a lot of people are now wearing Adidas and New Balance. Like, I've seen a lot more non-Nike shoes just walking around London than you would have seen maybe 10 years ago. There's more people just wearing other brands. Doesn't matter what brand it is, but the streets aren't dominated by just Nike anymore. There's other brands people want to wear, and they're proud to wear it. They're bringing out new and innovative stuff. They're bringing out quality things. It's all well and good. The CEO went to say that the shoppers quickly get bored with the brand's rotation. Retros, I'll say, right? If you don't bring in new stuff, new product, new innovation, new color, I think the demand is suffering. Of course. Especially JD Sports. Most of the stuff that they sell them is like gray, navy blue, black and white. Innovative silhouettes don't really exist, really. It's all the same retros, Air Force Ones, Air Max 90s, Air Max 95s, maybe Nike Air Max 270s and shit. Maybe now there's Nike Air Max DNs. Same nonsense. Now, why do I say this is definitely Nike's fault? Look at these new shoes. Quote unquote, new shoes that are coming out. Nike Air Max Tiempo, Nike Air Max Plus Tiempo, meant to be coming out later this year. That is not innovation. That is just a regular Nike Air Max Tiempo a regular Nike Air Max Plus with a Tiempo soccer, indoor shoe fucking flap, similar like to a Samba. That's basically what they've done. They've taken the same thing and obviously the same swoosh on a Tiempo and put it on a fucking Nike Air Max Plus. This is why Nike sales are slumping, because they're not innovating. And this is a really sad thing, because Nike have some of the best product designers, industrial designers, shoe designers in the world working out in Oregon, but they're not doing anything. None of the stuff they're making into production. All the stuff that gets made in Innovation Lab, where does that get put? Where does that get stored? Where does that get sold? That sneakers app in low quantities, it's not getting pushed out mass market wise. The retros that come out, they're not done to spec. They're done haphazardly. They're meant to be directed to sneakerheads, but they're not done in high quality or, you know, with a high level of attention to detail. The sneakerheads don't like it. They're trying to sell them to the mass audience. They don't like it either. And it fails, like the Air Max Plus, right? Or the Air Max Lite, sorry, which I still never will forgive Nike for. Nike ruined one of the greatest Nike Air Maxes ever in the history, Nike Air Max Lites, by making the retro absolutely terrible. I'll never forgive them for that. But this is proof that Nike don't have any innovation. They've taken a classic Air Max Plus, a very popular shoe, especially in Europe, popular Air Max, probably worldwide, I'd imagine nowadays, and just added a fucking Tiempo skin over the top of it, giving it a swoosh on the outside, big white swoosh, and a fucking flap tongue on the top. That's why the sales have gone down, because they're not innovating, not bringing anything new or fresh. Same silhouette, Same thing that you're kind of used to, and just sort of like hybrid. That's what they do. Just hybrid. What can we do? Take this shoe, mend it with this shoe. Take this popular shoe, blend it with this shoe. It's like, no, make a new shoe, bro. Like, make something fresh and new. If Tinker Hatfield was able, and all the other designers able to create Air Max 90s, Air Max 1s, Air Trainer 1s, why can't these new designers create new silhouettes that will, you know, test, will be able to, like, tell a different story for Nike in the future? That's why Ye was able to crush it so much with Yeezy. He brought all those new shapes in so quickly when he was at Adidas. But look what Nike's done. Absolutely nothing. Look at this shit. Who wants this stuff? Like, who honestly is going to buy this? This is definitely made for, like, a streetwear, hipster, sportswear brand. I mean, sportswear, streetwear, in limited edition kind of quote-unquote fan base. But this is the kind of stuff you're going to find at the fucking Dover Street Market sale. These are going to sit on the shelves for ages. They're a very Marmite-y type of silhouette. No, very Marmite-y type of style of a shoe. They're very dated. They're going to be dated very soon because they're probably trying to jump on the Samba trend and get a hold of that market. But even the Samba thing is kind of died out. These are terrible. These are absolutely terrible. So this is the reason why Nike sales have slumped and why JD Sports is complaining. So JD Sports is probably going to have more of an effect in changing the way Nike do their things, because JD Sports is probably a really big account for Nike. So they're going to want to make them happy. But us sneakerheads that have been crying about these things, we're not really going to make any change. They're not going to listen to us. They're probably going to listen to JD Sports more than listen to us. That's a really depressing side of the whole thing. Do you know what I mean? That's a really depressing side of the whole thing. They're probably going to listen to JD Sports more. So they're probably going to get innovation through a GR store. A GR store is going to put pressure on Nike to innovate more, to take more risks. And that's going to then filter down into the fucking hip, into the limited edition kind of, you know, sneakerhead world, which is weird because usually what's the other way around. Usually in sneaker industry, the limited edition shit is stuff that trickles down into the GR world. But now it's going to be the other way around. Absolutely wild. Wild things. But big up the JD Sports CEO. Big up him for fucking speaking the truth. Big up Regis Schultz. Big up him, the CEO of JD Sports. Again, a killer. Probably not sneaker, just a fucking, you know, balls to the wall, super fucking businessman. And, you know, he figured out pretty quickly that these motherfuckers just keep sending us the same fucking silhouette of shoes, the same Air Max, the same Air Max 90, the same Air Force Ones, the same shit every fucking year. Even the tech suit. That's not really changed that much. Innovation on the materials, I think, a little bit. The color combinations, not very interesting, to be honest. Can you get Nike tech suits on ID yet? I don't really know. You should be able to. Considering how popular they are, you should be able to customize your Nike tech suit on fucking Nike ID. I'm not sure if you can do that just yet. It's fucking garbage, bro. It honestly is garbage. And it's sad to see because Nike at one point was the premier brand to wear, numero uno, but they're taking it off the pedal. They've let other brands come and take their spot. People are now wearing all manners of brands. Even people are wearing Asics now. People are wearing Diodoros. People are wearing Mizunos. People are wearing Mizunos now. Mizuno are doing actually a good job of retroing loads of cool shit. And now Nike are out here, you know, putting together a fucking mix of a Tiempo and an Air Max Plus and thinking people are going to go crazy. Like, come on, bro. You're a bit late. So big up that fucking CEO from JD Sports for saying the truth. I really did appreciate him for speaking that what he said, because most likely people will listen to him. They won't listen to me. They'll listen to us fucking lowly sneakers on the social media, but they'll listen to probably someone like him. 100% of the way, they'll probably listen to him. So credit to him, credit to fucking him. Next on the list, last one before I leave you guys, courtesy of Hypebeast regarding Clot. So Clot recently, the premier Chinese streetwear brand, global, founded by Edison Chen and his partner, I forgot his fucking name, it escaped me. I think it was a K or P, I forgot what his name is exactly was called. Nice guy as well. I think I spoke to him over email once, but his name escapes me, please forgive me. But Clot, premier fucking streetwear brand, been around for fucking eons. Ever since I've been buying shoes, love the brand, love Edison, cool story, always gives great interviews, and really definitely a really nice guy. I met him once when I went to see the Virgil show, and he was very courteous, very polite, very nice, especially considering the level of clout he has. To be like that nice is really, you know, not really common, especially if you're in the streetwear sneaker scene head. You know how these guys with like little bits of power, little bit of influence, little bit of status, like they're fucking egomaniacal. The fact that, you know, Edison Chen, this like well-established, clouted up, well-to-do, very successful, you know, guy, influential person, was able to be nice to me and just be cool, even though he didn't know who I was. I'm some random fucking skivvy just hanging around there. Says a lot about his character. They recently decided to leave Nike. bit, you know, tumultuous, really, considering their history with Nike and all the legendary collaborations they've had over the years, and then decided to jump on to do collaborations with Adidas. At the time, I didn't really think it made a lot of sense because, like, you know, Clot is a Nike brand. Nike is Clot. The collaborations are fucking legendary. Don't even seem to talk about them too much, right? Yeah, the dragon shit. You know what it is. And they decided to link up to Adidas. The first efforts I've seen for Adidas aren't the greatest. I'm not really too fond of them. I don't really mind the Adidas superstars they've done with Clot, where they've kind of got these ridge soles. They've kind of got this really exaggerated, like, cut sole. It kind of looks like an Oxford. It kind of makes me look like a dress shoe, but it's a superstar. It's been kind of luxed up with some nice materials. It kind of reminds me of those Hender Scheme type of shoes. So pretty nice. But the rest of it, probably not for me. But those superstars I'll probably definitely wear. But now I'm starting to understand why Clot collaborated with Adidas, why they left Nike to join Adidas. Because maybe the reason why they did it is because Adidas gives them more flexibility and more room to do interesting things, like release their own sneaker. So Clot have designed their first ever inline sneaker called the Parable. Now, don't get me wrong, it does look a bit similar or very close to an Air Force One. So it kind of lends back to their history of working with Nike and creating some legendary Air Force Ones. But this might be more of the reason of why they left Nike, or why they refused to maybe sign on with Nike to sign with Adidas, because maybe Adidas has given them more room to do other things as opposed to just stick to only, because probably if you sign to Nike as a collaborative partner, maybe you're only allowed to just do footwear with them. You can't do your own inline footwear. You can't collaborate with other footwear brands, but maybe Adidas are a bit more, you know, loose and a bit more free because they realize that, hey, we want to get you on board for your brand, to bring in your audience and shit for the clout. But also we know if you're successful, if you do cool shit with your brand, that's going to have a trickle down effect to what we do. That's a great way to go about doing things. So I love this approach. So this is the shoe. It's called the Parable. As you can see here, it's very similar to an Air Force One. The only thing I'd say is different, there's less paneling on the top. So on the side here, you've got this really long, elongated sort of like mudguard area that wraps around the front of the toe all the way into the instep. And then you've not got much else on the upper, really. You've got the main body. I don't think this is even a different panel. I think it's just a different stitch that holds the fucking heel cushioning. You've got a nice heel tab there, and obviously the eyelet stays. But there's not much else, uppers and sections here on the top. Just this one. It's basically, it kind of feels like there's like four pieces. Maybe this one, two, three, and then four. That's it. There's not much else in terms of like padding and bits on top of. So it's kind of a minimalist shoe in that regard. And maybe this speaks more to where they're going, right? Edison Chen is also growing up. I think he might be in his 40s now. Maybe, not too sure. Maybe he's at Bobby Hundred's age, 50, 40 years old. So he's probably getting a little bit older now. Maybe he doesn't want to wear as much louder shoes. Maybe have something like casual you can wear with everything, versatile. So maybe that goes to why the shoe looks the way it does. So you've got this all white design, crisp white, really big, chunky outsole here, kind of split. It comes, I don't know if this is the wrapping, where it sort of looks like it's been shrink wrapped, made look like a toy or like a collectible or something. Hope it's not an NFT shit. Hope it's not NFT. Then you've got this interesting logo stitch here. I'm not sure if it's the logo for the design, but you've got this logo where it's kind of like, oh, maybe it's a logo. It's a C. You've got this C that almost looks like a little bit like the Margiela, where it's like the four sewing things, right, in terms of the label. So you've got this C in here that kind of maybe is a little bit of a sign on the side. Maybe it's a quality control thing. Maybe it's a thing to stop with the fakes. And I like the outsole too. You got this nice kind of like divot on the middle here. Got this nice chunky outsole. Nice outsole. Nice chunky midsole there. Nice white color. Again, it comes in white. Nice crisp laces. Nice padding on the inside. Sample written on the back on the heel tab there. And again, nice white crisp design all over the shop as well. And at the bottom, you've got the Clot logo design on the outside, which is really cool. I quite like this Clot design logo here on the outside inscribed. So all in all, a pretty laid back, paired back design. No too many bells and whistles, nothing too crazy. Kind of a really big departure from what they've done with their sneaker collaborations and shit. So clearly trying to rein stuff back in a little bit and kind of make it a little bit more sensible looking and maybe a bit more grown up, a bit more minimal. And maybe this is going to be the basis for like doing a bit more racier stuff later down the line. Or maybe this is kind of like what they're going to be doing now. Maybe the clothing will be the racier stuff and then the footwear will just be a bit pared down. Or maybe what they'll do, which is probably likely, put all the racier stuff into the Adidas collaborations and then do the inline shoes to be a bit more grown up. So you have two different options. If you want a Clot design shoe that's a bit more limited, I guess, that's obviously lending to sneaker history and Nike and whatever, Adidas sort of stuff, whatever Adidas, you can go there. But if you want stuff that's a bit pared down, a bit more grown up, a bit more versatile. You can wear with, you know, your actual grown up stuff. Here you go. So I quite like it. I don't mind it, to be fair. Again, it's kind of got golf vibes about it, a bit mostly soccer shoes vibes about it. Again, chunkier. So they've done a good job in terms of making it look quite chunky, but also look quite slim at the same time, which is pretty hard to do with a shoe, especially with that size of outsole and midsole. It's hard to make something look that chunky, but also make it look quite slim. So they did a good job in that regard. The shape's really nice. Nice flat sole. Probably cost them an arm and a leg to get it produced, because shoes are really expensive to make. So I'm curious to see what the retail price for these will be when they actually do eventually drop. Let's actually see. No actual price there. No idea on the price. At launch, the shoes available to public in a white colorway. They're available at select 2C stores worldwide. And it's coming out in May. So no real date on them yet, but they say May. No real price, but I really do like them. So the Clot first inline sneaker called the Parabola is out very, very soon. Check it out where you need to check it out. Anyways, my friends, that has been it. That's the Jackson Zinger Show, episode number 760. Thank you for tuning in as per usual. Links to all of the discussion topics will be available in the description. Also, the tune of the day is available down below as well. And obviously, links to contact me can be found in the description too. Make sure you click all those buttons if you are feeling that way inclined. If you're listening via the podcast app, you will all hear my song of the day playing underneath my voice. If you're watching via the YouTube, you'll hear nothing. It will fade to black, and I'll see you guys again very, very, very soon. Peace out. But every time a problem ends, another one begins, and the stone walls of harmony all bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. I don't want to live like this, but I don't want to die. Like a young pretender, beneath these velvet gloves I hide the shameful crooked ends of a moneylender. Cause I still remember, anger wants a voice, voices wanna sing, sinners harmonize till they can't hear anything. Thought that I was free from all that questioning, but every time a problem ends, another one begins, and the stone walls of harmony all bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. I don't wanna live like this, but I don't wanna die. And the stone